Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, June 23rd, 2018. This is episode 1499. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Simply Safe. Protect your home and family with an A-plus home security system. To learn more about Simply Safe today, visit simplysafe.com/twit. And by Wink, the best way to discover new wines you will love. Go to trywink.com/techguy and get $20 off your first shipment. And by LastPass. Join over 33,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at lastpass.com/twit. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Wow, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We got your smartphones, we got your smart watches, we got your augmented reality, all that stuff. 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number if you want to talk high tech. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still reach me. All you have to do is call that number from a Skype or something like that. 8888-ASK-LEO. Skype out should get you where you want to be. And it should be continue to be toll free. Apple has relented. I'm happy to see on the sticky keys. They didn't want to admit it, probably because they're worried about the expense, but they are acknowledging now a small percentage of the new MacBooks, the ones with the butterfly keys, a small percentage, maybe have a little bit of a problem. And if you're experiencing, let me read it exactly. Today we launched a keyboard service program for our customers that covers a small percentage, small percentage of keyboards in certain MacBook and MacBook Pro models, which may exhibit one or more of the following behaviors: letters or characters that repeat unexpectedly or don't appear when pressed, or keys that feel sticky or aren't responding in a consistent manner. Apple's facing not one, not two, but three class action lawsuits over these keyboards. If you have any of the new Apple computers, Apple laptops with the those really short travel butterfly keys, that would be a MacBook from 2015, 16, or 17, a MacBook Pro from 2016, 17, then you can bring it in and they'll fix it for free. And if you already paid for repairs, which can be quite pricey if you're not in warranty anymore, up to $700, they'll refund it. Good news. Good news. So I'm glad that they finally admitted this. They took, you know, this is kind of par for the course. Most companies are slow to admit manufacturing defects. But, you know, there comes a time when you just have to acknowledge it and fix it and move on. And Apple can afford to do that. So that's good. So if you have a sticky, you know, the problem with these keys, you know, if you have almost any other computer and a crumb gets under there, which it does, I mean, let's face it, people eat. They probably shouldn't, but they eat while they're using their laptops and stuff falls in and gets under there. And normally you can just pry it off with a screwdriver, or blow it out and pop the key back on. It's a fairly easy thing to do. You can't do it with these butterfly keys, and you can't really blow air even under them. And so it ain't a small percentage. I would say just anecdotally, and of course anecdotally means just people who've told me, but I would say about half the people who have these keyboards are having problems of some kind with them. It's a problem. And Apple, I hope, redesigns it. I had a MacBook, 15-inch MacBook Pro from 2016, and with the Touch Bar, I couldn't live with it. So I sent that back and got the 13-inch without the touch bar. Same problem. I had the MacBook, the little butterfly. I can't type with it. So I went back, and Apple still sells them, interestingly, to the 2015 15-inch MacBook Pro with a nice squishy keyboard. And that's great, and I love it. And I wish they'd update it because it's now, you know, pretty old, fourth generation Intel processor. That's four generations ago. But, you know, the truth is Intel hasn't really made that many big changes anyway in its processors. And I don't think it's that slow compared to the modern processors. So it's dual core, not quad core. Maybe that makes a difference. In any event, I think it's somebody in the chat room saying, this is not a defect. Well, it's a defect. No, it is a defect. Some have decided they do not like the keyboard. I just feel the need to rant endlessly. Well, I admit I don't like the keyboard. I never had the defect because I got rid of the thing right away. But believe me, I've talked to far too many people with non-functioning keyboards to think that it is not a defect. There is clearly a problem. And we know now there is. Apple has admitted it. So I don't know what you're talking about. They've admitted it. I think we now know how the FBI got into that Apple iPhone from the tragedy in Bakersfield. A researcher has now figured out a way that even on an iPhone as recent as running 11.3, which is everything but the most recent update, is easily opened up when connected to a computer. You just connect it up and you can try as many passcodes as you want. You know that thing where you say after 10 times erase the phone, that doesn't do anything? You can just keep doing it. Then admittedly, you can't do it super fast. So we have a four-digit passcode with 10,000. That's 9999 plus, I guess, 0000 with 10,000 choices. Take about a day. The researcher says, now, if you have six, and six, by the way, is the default on the current iPhones. If you have six, yeah, it's not practical. It's going to take much, much longer. So there's something, a lesson in there for you. If you want to keep bad guys or good guys, if you want to keep people out of your iPhone, have a six-digit passcode, or better yet, a real passphrase, which is a pain, I understand. But between fingerprint and Face ID, you know, you most of the time you're not entering it. I have a, I don't know, 15 or 16 character, I can't remember, it's long, passphrase lock in the iPhone, and that works quite well. I'm happy with that. Here's also some good news for privacy advocates. The U.S. Supreme Court on Friday ruled that a common practice in law enforcement is not constitutional. All the major cell phone carriers have had special websites, portals they call them, for law enforcement to go and find out the location of any cell phone at any time, historic information, for about $1.50. Literally, about $1.50. But it happens so much that it's actually a nice little profit center for these companies. There's even other companies that collect all this information. This came up because there was a case against somebody who had robbed, or was accused of, I should say, robbing convenience stores. And the way the only evidence they had that he was the guy is they got 18 months of cell phone location records and said every time there was a robbery, the guy was in the area. Every time. And the jury convicted him. He appealed, and on Friday, the Supreme Court ruled in his favor. They're going to send it back to the lower court, so he's not off the hook. But they said you can't get cell phone location data without a warrant. Chief Justice Roberts wrote, "Mapping a cell phone's location over the course of 127 days." I'm sorry, it wasn't 18 months. It was a 4 months, 127 days, provides an all-encompassing record of the holder's whereabouts. As with GPS information, the time-stamped data provides an intimate window into a person's life, revealing not only his particular movements, but through them his familial, political, professional, religious, and sexual associations. Wow. Wow. Kennedy, Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch dissented. It was a close vote. Good news, though. Good news. Law enforcement will need a warrant. That seems fair. A warrant to get that location information. Technology companies had urged, like Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, Verizon, Twitter, and Google, had urged the court to protect that data. So I guess Verizon didn't want to do it anymore. There you go. So some good news and bad news in the privacy realm and for keyboards. Thank you for being here today. We're going to take your calls in just a little bit. 8888-ASK-LEO. That is the phone number, 888-827-5536. I'd love to hear from you. We do have a website you can always refer to if you would like to figure out what's going on with the show. Don't feel like you have to write everything down. Just go to techguylabs.com. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Kim Schaffer's here. She's ready. First tech guy of the summer. So we're all wearing shorts, right? Or something. Your call's next. We're going to have hot music today, right, Kim Schaffer? Because it's the first tech guy of the summer.
And it's going to be 100 here.
And it's going to be 100, which in Northern California is scary because we're not really
used to it.
We're not really prepared.
Yeah.
Prepared for it. But we're dressed for it, aren't we?
We are. We're in our summer best.
Our summer best. And you've been slaving over a hot phone in this hot heat, getting callers ready for us. Do you have?
It's really very air conditioned in here.
Actually, yeah, it's too cold often. I know. I've seen you wear blankets.
I'll be a popsicle by the end of the show, and yeah. Then I'll have to go out there and defrost. So.
Yeah. Who should I start with here?
How about Terry in Amarillo having problems with his Parallels running Windows?
Okay. Thank you, Kim. Hello, Terry. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk to you again.
Nice to speak with you.
I have a MacBook Air, and I have Parallels on it, and I installed Windows 7, and at the right time when they were offering it, I upgraded to Windows 10. Well, the Parallels completely crashed and not only took the Parallels, but it also took down the Mac, and so I had to
start over. No, that's not possible. What happened? Did it trash the drive?
It did.
Yeah, I shouldn't say it's not possible. It's highly unlikely.
It was during a Parallels update, and whenever it's running, well, it went to a blank screen, and it stayed there for 12 hours. And so, you know, I thought, well, anyway, so I started over, and whenever I installed Windows on the new setup under Parallels, it's now wanting me to pay for it again.
Yeah, because I'm guessing that the way Parallels, we should explain, I'll explain briefly what's going on here. Parallels, which is a virtual machine program for Macintosh, there's Parallels, which may have been one of the first, and then VMware, which is the granddaddy of VM machines, makes one also called Fusion. But the idea is you run Parallels, and then you can install another operating system into Parallels and run it while you're running your Mac. So you have your Mac, and then you have a Windows machine or a Unix machine or a Linux machine or a variety, or even older versions of Mac OS. Sometimes people use it for that. Parallels, the way Parallels works, as you know, is it creates in order to simulate a hard drive, everything's simulated on the Windows machine. So it becomes an intermediary between your network card and your hard drive and all this stuff. And what it does is it creates a file, a single file, that is the Windows machine, the image of the Windows machine. That's the drive and everything. That's why it's unlikely the Parallels in its normal operation would trash your Mac, because it's not operating on your whole Mac, just on a file. However, when you do an update to Parallels, it does install, I'm sure, an extension, probably a kernel extension or KXT file, in order to work. And I suspect that's the problem. It also, when you license it, a lot of programs do this. It probably puts down a hidden file somewhere, or maybe even not a hidden file, in the application support folder, somewhere like that, that says, yeah, this is registered. Here's the serial number. This is the owner. So if you reformat the drive, yeah, you're going to have to re-register Parallels. So you're saying it wants to re-register Parallels, not Windows, right?
Oh, Parallels works just fine. It's just the Windows 10.
Well, yeah, you've lost your VM probably. Did you lose the whole VM?
Yes.
Yeah. So you have to reinstall Windows as you did in the first place. That installs into a single file. I'm not sure. It seems pretty bad. to crash your system. I hope that it's not just a coincidence. Sometimes people often say, oh, yeah, I installed something and my system crashed because of it. But it might have been merely that the system was, you know, on its last legs, and that just pushed it over the edge. Nothing you do when you install Parallels should really cause a problem. So you when you installed your Windows 10 on Parallels, did you have a license key in the first place, or did you start with Windows 7?
I started with Windows 7, yeah.
So I get it. You upgraded 7 to 10.
That's right.
Yeah, so you'll need to do the same. Unfortunately, you'll need to do the same steps. Windows 10 on regular hardware, you wouldn't need to, you know, relicense it. But because you've really, in effect, lost the hardware, this has always been kind of an interesting question, is if I register Windows to a Parallels virtual machine, lose the virtual machine, and start over, wouldn't it be the same machine? I don't know. That's a good question. Windows 10 says, I don't recognize this machine, right?
That's right.
Yeah, so I think what you're going to have to do is, I hate to say this, is install Windows 7 on the virtual machine. Use that Windows 7 license key that you have.
Okay.
That should work because it looks the same to Windows 7, and then upgrade to Windows 10. And then from now on, what you want to do is back up the VM file. So Parallels creates a folder in your system in your local home directory called virtual machines, but something like that. And then in that folder would be a file that says Windows 10, or maybe it'll say Windows 7 because that's what you're going to start with. Make a copy of that. That's actually the entire PC, so you can copy that onto something else and keep it, and then you'll never have to do this again. You'll have to go through it again. So I'm sorry that happened. I've had good results with Parallels. I tend to use VMware Fusion now. It's really a kind of a clever way of doing things. There's one more interesting slice on this. Both Parallels and VMware Fusion will recognize a boot camp partition. So another thing you could do, maybe a thing to think about, using boot camp means that you'll boot into Windows and there'll be no Mac, no traces of Mac left. You'll be running Windows on Mac hardware, which runs fine, provided you have the drivers from Apple. So if you used boot camp to create a Windows partition on your Mac, you'd have that option to boot into Windows when you first start up. But also these virtual machines will see it and say, oh, you have Windows on a boot camp partition. You want me to use that for virtualization? The advantage of that is then the license for Windows 10 will be permanent because it'll be licensed to your computer. So you'll have to, if for some reason you format your drive, you'll have to reinstall boot camp, but you won't have this same issue of having to run Windows 7 first and then run Windows 10. And you'll have an additional advantage that when you do want to run Windows at full speed, virtualization, running in a virtual machine, has some overhead, so it's a little slower. But if you wanted to run at full speed, maybe to run a game or something that really required all the horsepower of the Mac, running it in boot camp is a great solution. So then you get the best of both worlds. That's typically how I do it. 8888-ASK Leo, that's the phone number. You know, Microsoft does charge for Windows 10, oddly enough. But if you're upgrading from Windows 7, it's free. And I think you can still upgrade. I think in this case, you could still do the upgrade. Actually, that's an interesting question, too. Anybody have any experience with that? 8888-ASK Leo. Scott Wilkinson, home theater guru, coming up. Now that I think of it, I'm pretty sure it will still activate, right? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There you go, that magic music. It signals the arrival in his Funkmobile, accompanied with the Funkettes, Scott Wilkinson. Our home theater guru.
Get funky.
He is the funkiest tuba player in the world. Thank you, Scott. Editor at the AVS Forum, and he joins us each week to talk about home theater, audio, and video. I just was mentioning that I got this Amazon Fire TV Cube. Have you ever used the Fire TV?
I have not tried. No.
Yeah, we've used the
Roku stick and the Apple TV and so on, but I've never tried Fire TV, and I don't yet have the Cube. I saw that last week, the announcement that it was available.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that's pretty interesting. I must admit, I've always been a little squeamish about any device that kind of listens.
Well, I'm sure it's listening to everything you're doing in the TV room.
Yeah.
Because it's an Echo.
It's an Echo.
It's an Echo.
I don't have an Echo.
Supports 4K, HDR10, and Atmos, which is kind of cool. Not Dolby Vision. But
I wonder about HLG.
Doesn't mention that's the, HLG.
That's the other high dynamic range format that the World Cup, some sources are providing that World Cup in HDR with using HLG.
Oh, interesting. Well, the idea of this is it's a Fire TV that you control with your voice, and it's kind of cool.
Right.
I mean, I set it up in my office, and it's kind of cool because you can go into the office and say, turn on the TV, or you can even better say, let's watch Westworld.
Right.
Echo, watch Westworld. It's a little, you know, funny, and I'm sure Michael will have the same experience, because what it then does is it searches for Westworld. It has built into it Netflix, of course, and Amazon Prime and Amazon, all the Amazon music, all the Amazon stuff. And then you can add, as I did, HBO Go or HBO Now. You can add Showtime anytime. Mm-hmm. So I have HBO Now on there. And so I said, let's watch Westworld. And what it'll do is then looks throughout its database of stuff and says, oh, there's two Westworlds. There's the movie, the old Yul Brynner movie.
1970s, yeah.
And then there's the TV show. And then it puts up on the screen. It uses the screen. Puts up on the screen, and then you're supposed to say play one or play two.
Right.
So it takes a few steps. If you ask for the weather, it puts a weather report up on the screen.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
You can watch NBC and CBS if you have an account with them, and stuff like that.
You mean the streaming ones?
Yeah, it's on demand. I don't think they have live. And that's been the problem all along, is that, you know, if you want to replace TV, I didn't see YouTube. YouTube's not on here, and I didn't see YouTube TV, which would give me live TV.
Right.
It has Hulu. So, you know, you can control Netflix with it, which is kind of cool. But I like the idea. And then when you leave the room, this is my favorite part. You could say, Echo, turn off the TV, and the whole thing shuts down. I have it hooked up through my AV receiver. So it has it's got an IR blaster all around. It's a Cube. So it fires infrared out from the whole. And there's even a little attachment so you can put an IR blaster.
Wow, below. So it fires out IR commands in all directions, sort of?
Yeah, but it doesn't control the Apple TV or the Roku. It could, but it doesn't.
It doesn't. It's just trying to replace them.
Right. That's probably the point. But it does record my AV receiver. And it does record my control my TV. And that
control
was fairly easy to set up. Yeah.
You know, I've read an article recently about how many things from Star Trek are now real.
Yeah, this is one.
And that's one of
computer.
Them.
Computer.
Yes.
Working.
So voice this control is really amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like you say, some people don't want anything listening in the house. Don't forget, though, your phone is also listening, but we won't. I don't want to trouble you.
So. Why, thank you.
So we'll just move on. You wanted to talk about sound bars, and I would say of all the AV stuff that we talk about, that's the number one topic.
Yep, that and TVs, I bet.
Yeah. Well, everybody wants to know about TVs, but for some reason, people are really, because TVs today don't come with very good sound, or some don't even come with sound at all, so
and
you need something, and a lot of people don't
really
want
bad.
Yeah, they don't want to put in five or seven speakers.
Mm-hmm.
So a soundbar can do it all, right? Can it do Atmos? Somebody asked me last week.
Yes, it can. There are a number of soundbars that will do Atmos and that does it in this reflective way, right? We've talked about this before, where Atmos, as you know, is speakers around you or sound sources around you and overhead, forming a fully hemispherical sound field. So if a helicopter flies overhead, you hear it flying overhead.
Now in the movie theater, that really works. It's very powerful.
Oh yeah, it's phenomenal.
But how well does
real
the sound
speakers up there?
Yeah, right. They've got big speakers up there.
Big speakers and a bunch of them.
Yeah.
At home, you can do at most, unless you have a super expensive system, you can do at most four speakers overhead. But even if, but say you have a domestic partner who doesn't want you to put speakers on the ceiling.
Yeah.
You can do it by reflecting sound, by having separate speakers that are sort of sitting on top of your regular speakers that push sound up to the ceiling that reflects back down to you. And it sounds like it's coming from overhead. Sound bars can do this as well because they have drivers, little speaker elements that vibrate. They have drivers in them that send sound straight toward you as normal speakers would. But they also have drivers that point upward and bounce the sound off the ceiling and it comes back down to you and it sounds like something's coming from overhead. And there are quite a few companies that make them. LG has a couple. Philips, not so common in this country. Samsung, very common in this country. Sony, Yamaha has a number of them.
How well do they work, though? I mean,
surprisingly well.
Okay.
It's amazing, actually. Now, you're only getting basically two channels of overhead sound, which is less effective than if you have four channels of overhead sound.
Oh, I didn't know you could do four. Okay.
You can, yeah. In fact, the latest, I think it's the latest Denon flagship receiver will let you do six overhead speakers. And that's the first time that's happened. Now, that's an expensive product. That's several thousand dollars just for the receiver.
Then you've got to buy six speakers. Wow.
Right, exactly.
Wow.
But a soundbar, as you point out, and rightly so, is intended for people who don't want to mess with a bunch of speakers but want better sound than is coming from their TV.
Right.
And virtually any soundbar will do that. And a number of these now have this Atmos feature where you have two channels anyway going up as well as channels coming straight at you. And even simulating as if they're coming from beside you or even a little behind you. It's amazing what DSP, digital signal processing, can do.
They're tricking your ears.
Yes.
Really interesting.
Exactly so.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're tricking your ears into thinking you've got a sound coming from side over here to the side or a little behind you even. And then they're using this reflective technology to give you the sense of sounds coming from overhead. And it's remarkably effective.
Well, all right. Is there one that you really like that every? I mean, that's not too expensive, but people
should look at? Well, I generally, for not very expensive ones, I generally recommend Vizio. And my colleague Mark Henninger just published his review of a Vizio soundbar on AVS Forum. It doesn't have Atmos, but it's only a couple $100.
Wow. So that's a good option if you don't have decent sound in your TV, but you don't.
Exactly, which 99.99% right. of people with TVs don't have decent sound in their TVs.
Yeah.
A soundbar is the next step up, and it's a big step up. Now, the step beyond that, of course, is an audio-video receiver and speakers all around. But if you don't want to go that route, soundbar's great.
That's the solution we like, but not everybody can do. Scott Wilkinson, as always, a pleasure. If you want to know more, avsforum.com. Scott's always got great reviews and articles, and he joins us each week at this time to help you better understand your home theater options. Thank you, Scott.
You bet.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up right after this. And now I give you your buddy and ours, 250 seconds of Scott Wilkinson.
Thank you so much. Beatmaster says, yes, some wives wouldn't approve of more than a soundbar. You're exactly right. That's exactly correct. And it's mostly wives. I tend to say spouse or domestic partner or whatever because who knows? Maybe the female of the house, if there is a female in the house, might be the tech person who wants all the latest gadgetry. But statistically speaking, probably not. let's see. WP788 says it's not surround, but my TV basically has a built-in two-channel soundbar. Yeah, there are a few like that, and they can sound not too bad. You know, it's interesting. I just finished reviewing the LG C8 2018, next to the very lowest end or entry level OLED TV. And the sound of that thing was surprisingly good. The other one that I can think of that the sound is really good is the Sony OLED. And that uses a really interesting technology that I'm sure I've spoken about before, which is the entire screen, that is the OLED screen, the TV screen that you're watching, is also the speaker. It actually vibrates. It has actuators behind the screen that vibrate, and the entire screen becomes the speaker. It sends sound waves out into the room. And you'd think, well, wait a second, I should be able to see that. Wouldn't that degrade the picture? Not at the frequencies that it's reproducing, which are relatively high. It also has a built-in quote-unquote subwoofer, which isn't really a subwoofer, but it's for the low frequencies, and that doesn't vibrate the screen. If you did have the screen try to reproduce the low frequencies, you would see that, and it would not be good. So Sony wisely decided to only let the screen do the mid-range and up and higher frequencies because you can't see it. And the quality is amazing. It's really something. Now, Sony started doing that last year with the what's called the A1E. This year, they've upped that model number to the A8F. And like some TVs, Vizio in particular, that last letter indicates the model year. So with Vizio TVs, we are now up to F. So you'll see in Vizio TVs, you'll see a P55-F1. Or F2, and those numbers after the letter indicate firmware updates, roughly. So, you know, you'll see an E55C1. Marsworm in the chat room was talking about whether or not to fix his Vizio C55. It was a P55, a P55-C1. So that's from 2015. And he said he could get it fixed for $350. And I said in the chat room, well, okay, that's less than probably most TVs would cost. Some are down there now, but you know, you might want to consider spending that money towards a newer TV, because the 2015, was it even 4K, Marsworm? I'm asking you. I don't remember if the C1 is 4K or 1080p. The P series is the best of the Vizios, in my opinion. And so if you can upgrade to a P55 F1, that is this year's model, I'm sure it'll be a significant upgrade to what you have. And I think it's worth spending the money on the upgrade there.
Stick around for the top of the hour.
Happy to.
Thank you, sir. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. I'll do a more thorough review, I guess, of the Amazon Q. But a lot, you know, if you're a Fire TV customer, this might be thinking about a Fire TV, this might be a good option for you. $120. I didn't mention that. It's much more expensive than a Amazon Fire TV. Same capabilities, except that you have an Amazon Echo associated with it. So you can use the Echo to control the Fire TV. And I like it that it will turn on the TV set and it turns on my AV receiver. So it sets it to its proper channel. So it can automatically kind of turn on the TV and go to something. That's kind of handy. I like talking to my TV. There's another option. We've talked about it before. Actually, I like quite a bit, called the Harmony Hub, the Logitech Harmony Hub. That also is an infrared device. And you can control the hub via your Amazon Echo. So if you already have an Echo and you want to control, you don't need a Fire TV, or you already have a Fire TV, or you don't want a Fire TV, but you do want to control the other stuff in your video cabinet, the Harmony Hub is actually a pretty good choice for that. And it's a little more flexible in terms of the kinds of things. I think it's $100, so it's roughly the same price. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you want to talk high tech. High tech means a lot, right? TVs, remote controls, but also computers, the internet. Anything with a chip in it, I guess. Richard West, L.A. is next. Actually, he has a question for you, Scott. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking this, because it's important to me. All right. Maybe to others.
Let me get Scott on the horn here. Go ahead. You there, Scott?
I sure am.
All right.
Hey, Scott. I have a video TV on your recommendation, and I'm very pleased with it in general. However, it worked very well for about a year and a half, and all of a sudden, when I tune on DirecTV 104, it tells me that my TV is not capable of receiving 4K, which is nonsense because it's been receiving 4K for a year and a half. Do you know anything about that?
Boy, no, I don't. And it works. It works on other channels.
Oh, it's no 4K on other channels. 104 is the 4K channel for DirecTV, and 105 and 106 too, I think.
Right, and you're wanting to watch the World Cup, I assume.
Yep. Yeah, well, a lot exactly. of things have passed by.
So, yeah, sure. You know, when what's happening here is, in my opinion, a handshake issue because the DirecTV box is querying the TV and saying, right. "Hey, can you do 4K?" Now, oddly, you'd say, "Well, you used to do it, but it doesn't have any memory, so it has to ask that every single time." Yeah. And for some reason, there's Scott. You see that? I would imagine you see this a lot. HDMI handshaking issues.
That is a big problem. Now, did it used to work? Was the next question I was going to ask. Have you ever gotten 4K from that channel?
For a year and a half, yes.
Yes, okay. So something changed.
Yeah. Well, something could have gone wrong.
Right. Or there might have been an automatic firmware update that messed something up.
I would first thing I'd do is replace the cable.
That's a good point. Although, again, if it's the same cable, if nothing has changed and it used to work and now it doesn't, I would think it's not the cable. However, that's certainly an inexpensive and easy thing to try. And just make sure that you have a cable that is certified high speed. And by high speed these days with HDMI, we mean 18 gigabits per second. And I just recently got some. There are certified cables that do that on Amazon. I think Cable Matters might be the brand. I can't remember now, but it was like $10 for a 6-foot cable, so it wasn't that expensive, and it was certified.
Please,
yeah, sure.
I have called DirecTV over the last month and a half, and they have told me it's a known issue. That's why. I'm glad to talk to you.
Oh, what's the issue?
In my system.
Did they say what the known issue is?
No, of course not.
So all that means is, other people have been calling about this.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now I presume, you got me curious.
I presume you've done all the handshaking stuff. Turn the TV off, turn the box off, then turn the TV on, then turn the box on, and try various orders and all of that stuff. Because that's
innumerable times.
Yeah.
Getting sick of it, I'm sure.
Yeah. Sounds like there might be a flaw in the DirecTV box if it's a known
problem. Yeah, it might have gotten a firmware update that screwed things up. Yeah. It's possible.
Well, they seem to know it's an issue, and they know my system. They install the boxes, obviously. Yeah. And when I asked about that, I said, do I need a new box? No, I'm not talking to the top rank of customer service, obviously.
When they
created a ticket, they said, for the upper echelons, and they said that they would inform me if something changes. And, of course, I've heard nothing at all.
And when was your last contact?
You've heard of it before.
When was your last contact with them?
Let me think. About 10 days ago.
Which box do you have? Which box do you have so people can... make a note.
Genie.
The Genie, okay.
The Genie, yeah, that's what you need. The Genie or the Genie 2 to get the World Cup in 4K HDR, which on DirecTV uses HLG. What's your TV? It's a Vizio, I think, right?
The Vizio, yeah, the one you recommended a couple of years ago, in fact.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Does it support HLG, Scott?
Okay.
Oh, yes, without a doubt. Okay. For a year and a half, I was watching all sorts of programs on it.
And they probably look great.
Oh, yes, I'm totally pleased, and congratulations to you. And I'm not going to turn it in for the latest, by the way.
I wonder if this is a World Cup issue. Can you watch stuff on 105 and 106?
I've tried them all.
Okay.
104, 5, and 6 before the World Cup even started, and I kept getting this message at the bottom of the screen, your TV does not support 4K. We're going to give it to you in 1080.
Yeah. Well, now you've got me curious. I'm going to contact DirecTV myself and say, what's the deal with this? And see if I can find out. And if I can, I'll talk about it next week.
Okay, and I will be listening next week. I'll be very
Given that they know it's a It's a known issue.
Yeah,
Richard.
Exactly.
Can you get them to send you a new box, or have they said they won't do that?
I didn't ask that, because the way they put it was, it wasn't just my box. It sounded like it was system-wide, and they're working on
it,
et cetera, et cetera.
Well, they're probably getting a lot of calls then.
Yeah.
I hear that World Cup's pretty popular on the television.
Yeah, that's what they say.
Well, it's been happening the World Cup started.
Yeah.
It started about a month and a half ago before the World Cup began.
Yeah, but the calls started a week
with
ago.
The World Cup. Yeah, exactly.
All
it
of
might
a sudden.
Have started a month ago, and they might have started getting a few calls, but once the World Cup began, I'm sure their call volume went way up.
Very interesting.
You may not be able to get through, Scott, even you.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. I've got some contacts in there. So
you know,
I'll
with
see.
Any
okay,
luck.
Thank you. I'll listen next week for sure.
Good. And let us know, too, if it starts working, Richard, because I wouldn't be surprised. They could push in a firmware update. And if there's
exactly.
a firmware glitch, it sounds like maybe an incompatibility, then they could probably push something that would fix that out.
Yeah. And, in fact, go to avsforum.com and look around. There might be other people with that issue and they're talking about it on the forum.
Yeah. Did they say, just one more question, Richard, did they say it was a known issue with that particular TV? Or
no.
No.
A known issue.
Known issue in general with DirecTV.
Which means it's their box
or
their system somewhere.
They're having a problem.
No, I gave them all the information they needed because obviously that was something of interest to me. And they know what I have. They know better than
How
I
frustrating.
Know what I have.
Yeah, because you really, the World Cup is so exciting and you do want to see it in 4K.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't because I don't have the right hardware, but those of you who do, I mean, of course you're going to want to see that. I bet you they get a lot of calls this weekend.
Yeah.
Well, but it's not just this weekend. It's been going on since
I understand.
The World Cup started, 5 days ago?
Yeah.
The call started before this.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm looking at the chat room. Scooter X is saying, try a different HDMI input. I don't think that'll work. I think we've solved the problem
that it is a
DirecTV problem.
Yeah, done all of that. It's just a
question.
Thank you, Scott, for sticking around. I appreciate it.
Sure, no
all
problem.
Right. See, it's nice. We can, you know, I feel like Woody Allen in Annie Hall. I can just pull Marshall McLuhan out of the line and say, well, I happen to have an expert here. That's nice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones. More of your calls coming up right after this. I guess there's a lot of traffic on the Reddit forums and the DirecTV forums about this. So it is absolutely a known issue, huh, Scott?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. All right, I'll give it to you for 500 seconds.
Thank you.
And I hope you'll enjoy those 500 seconds as much as I will.
I always do.
Thanks.
Thank you. Scooter X was – I tried to sneak that in there. Scooter X was saying that passing on info from DirecTV and Reddit forums regarding posts about that your TV does not support 4K message. I don't know this for a fact, Scooter X, but I would be willing to wager that that's probably, if it happens right away, immediately, when you first hook things up and you get that message, then sure, changing HDMI ports. Another important factor, which I don't think was a factor in his case, is virtually all 4K TVs with HDR capabilities have a switch buried in the menu system, and the switch is off by default, and you have to turn it on in order to tell the HDMI inputs, maybe some of them, maybe all of them on the TV, to go to the higher bit rate, 18 gigabits per second. It's off by default in order to make the TV as compatible as possible with other source devices. And some source devices, I guess, I have not run across this myself, but it might be that some source devices, if they communicate with the TV and the TV says, hey, I can accept 18 gigabits, they go, oh, I can't send 18 gigabits, so I'm not going to work. So the switch is turned off, and you have to go deep. You have to dig into the menu system and turn it on in order to get 18 gigabits. Now, I don't think that's this guy's problem because it used to work. That's the key. It used to work, and now it doesn't. And he hasn't changed anything. And when it used to work and now it doesn't, that indicates to me that something changed. And especially after he called DirecTV and they said, oh, this is a known problem, obviously something changed in the DirecTV box. And I would guess it's a firmware update that got pushed out, as DirecTV does, and all of these companies do, Dish as well, and so on, that you know, that broke that particular feature. Now they've got to fix it, and I hope they do. Beatmaster asked, maybe an EDID issue. EDID stands for Extended or Enhanced Display Identification. I forget whether it's enhanced or extended, but in any event, that's what it stands for. And it basically is a piece of data coming from the TV. After you make the HDMI handshake, then the TV sends its EDID information back to the source device. And this may be the source of why this the switch needs to be off by default that I was talking about a minute ago. The EDID goes back to the source device and says, here are my capabilities. And so Beatmaster is wondering if it's an EDID issue. I doubt that, because once again, it used to work. That is the critical piece of information. Ed says, DirecTV just updated their app on my Roku TV, and it's terrible. What? In what way is it terrible, Ed? That would be kind of interesting. Scooter X says, some posts say it happens every few weeks. Then there is a software update for DirecTV hardware and one for the TV that fixes it. Okay, so, you know, there's some stuff going on here. Emily the Strange. it means that he has a grandson who changed something by setting up a video game on it. Yeah, I suppose that would be true. Possible, anyway. Yeah, Mike Heiss. Hey, Mike, good to see you here. Could be an update they pushed that whacked it. Exactly. That's what I think happened. Razarius asks if I'm going to review the new Ant-Man movie. Yes, I am. I'm going, I believe, July 5th, the opening night. I have my ticket for Dolby Cinema, and I'm going to go see it. I didn't see Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, which was this weekend. I almost decided to go, and then I thought, you know what? More roaring dinosaurs. Same old, same old. But the Ant-Man movie looks like it could be fun. Web0109, is there a significant disadvantage having only HDR versus HDR on an OLED? I'm not sure I know what you mean by that. I'm looking to upgrade my main TV from a 10-year-old 1080p Panasonic Viera Plasma, which is great, which I loved, and which I agree is great. My budget is $1,000 maximum. I'd like to keep the size at or above 60 inches, which, correct me if I'm wrong, rules out an OLED purchase right now. Yeah, $1,000 for a 65-inch. You won't get a 60, but you'll get a 65. Yeah, that's not going to happen. OLED's more expensive than that. So I don't know what you mean by the disadvantage of having only HDR versus HDR on an OLED. I guess you might mean HDR on an LCD TV, in which case there are differences. OLED gets deeper blacks. LCD TV gets brighter brights, brighter whites. Sounds like a laundry commercial, I know, but that's what it is. And you probably can, I'm sure you can, get a 65-inch LCD TV with HDR for $1,000. Some of the Vizios, certainly, TCL can do it. And so I'd recommend looking at those in that price range. Let's see. How do you know if you are receiving 1080p or 4K picture? Is there something that indicates 4K, letting you know you're viewing 4K content? Most TVs have a little thing that pops up in the corner. In my case, on my Sony OLED, it's in the upper right corner, that tells you what the signal is that's coming in. So that's normally how you know. Maverick 56. Too many action movies these days. It's getting old with all these Marvel, DC comic movies. Yeah, I'm not. That is not an unreasonable position. There are an awful lot of them. I just happen to enjoy them. They're fun for a couple hours. Marsworm, we've been talking about his Vizio, whether to fix it or not. What TV would I recommend for $400 to $450 that could replace it? A 55-inch, maybe one of the lower-end Vizios might be at that price. TCL probably. Once again, Vizio or TCL are my two go-to brands for inexpensive but pretty good quality TVs. So that's about the story there. No, let's not do that. Ed only remembers resume after you've watched it. Oh, only remembers. Sorry, I don't quite understand what
resume.
You mean there, Ed. Resume. Thank you. After you've watched 15 minutes of a movie or show.
Thank you, Scott.
We'll talk about it later.
Have a great week. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography. We've got smartphones. We've got smart watches. We've got augmented reality. We've got digital streaming, net neutrality, all the topics of the tech world on this show. And they're all open for discussion. If it has a chip in it, I want to talk with you about it. Our phone number is 888-827-5536. That's 8888-ASK-LEO. See, easy to remember. 8888-ASK-LEO. You can call that toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you're calling from outside that area, I'd love to hear from you, but you'll have to use Skype out or something like that to call. That way it'll still be toll-free. 8888-ASK-LEO. We have a website. Good for you to know about, because this way you don't have to write anything down as you hear me talk about stuff or review things or answer questions. It's all up there at techguylabs.com. TechGuyLabs. I'm the tech guy. It's my lab.com. TechGuyLabs.com. And it's free. There's no sign up. It's just, you know, we've got a good search. It's easy to find stuff. And every show is up there, all 1,499. Tomorrow, episode 1,500 of this ongoing attempt to make sense of the technology world. I got a Chinese phone. I thought I'd be kind of interesting. You know, there's been all this controversy over ZTE and Xiaomi and Huawei, the big Chinese companies, the consumer electronics companies. And, of course, you may remember that ZTE has been banned from the United States. Huawei is not banned, but hard to find Huawei products because they're made in China, and there's kind of prejudice against them. I thought, well, there's a newish Huawei phone. Huawei is spelled, by the way, and this is another problem. People can't pronounce Huawei. It's perfectly pronounceable if you know Chinese, but if you don't, you just, is it Huawei? It's Huawei. They announced a phone a couple of months ago called the P20 Pro that they did with the German camera company Leica, that has a pretty amazing camera in it. And I thought, well, boy, I'm really interested in you know how good camera phones can be. It's a 5.8-inch phone. It's 1080p. It's not the super high resolution of Samsung's phones, but it's good enough. Great battery life, I hear. It runs Android, but it runs a special Huawei version of Android called Emui. I think that's how you pronounce it, Emui. And then some people really don't like Emui. But the thing that interests me again was this phone, which is, according to DxOMark, the best camera in a phone they've ever seen. It has a 20-megapixel monochrome sensor, 12-megapixel RGB sensor, it has I think the front-facing camera is 25 megapixels. There is a notch, just like an Apple's phone, because it has face recognition. They're using a digital image stabilization. Supposedly very good low light mode and so forth. I'm still reviewing the camera. I'm not done with that, but I did want to mention something. And in a way, it's to me, it's a celebration of how, believe it or not, how well we're doing in the United States in protecting privacy, particularly on Apple, but even on Android phones sold by Pixel, by Google, the Google Pixel. So when I turned on this Huawei P20 phone, I had to buy it from China, got shipped over from China. It was ready to go in English, signed in. It's like a regular Android phone, except a couple of things were a little odd. For instance, before even the Android sign in, it said, well, we'd like to give you localized weather information. Oh, yeah, okay. But for that, we not only need to track your location, we need to know your phone's unique identifying number, the IMEI, and MAC address. And I thought, really, for the weather? For the weather, you need that? For the weather? And that was just the beginning. I agreed to it. I thought, well, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. Throughout the phone, again and again, there's requests for very personal information, like unique identifying numbers, in apps that don't seem to need it. I was prohibited from signing up for a Huawei account. I don't know if that's U.S. Export restrictions or Huawei's attempt to kind of keep this thing on the up and up in the U.S. I couldn't use Huawei's music feature either. So a number of the apps on the phone are designed for, I guess, China-only use, certainly not in the U.S. anyway. Nevertheless, there was enough in there that made me some fairly seriously concerned that this phone really felt like it was gathering a lot of information about me for the Huawei company. Not for the carrier, because it was a carrierless phone. I ended up putting an AT&T SIM in it, but I could have used a T-Mobile SIM as well. It actually has a dual SIM slot, which is nice. You could use both if you wanted to. It's very common in the Chinese market and around the world, but not so much here in the U.S. It's a very nice phone. I want to continue to review the camera, but it made me really grateful, frankly, for American manufacturers and companies that sell in America, that they are a little bit more, I think, cautious about consumer privacy. Partly that's because we make a lot of noise about it. And as we know, in China, there isn't really that much interest in protecting individual privacy. They've got face recognition everywhere. There's a social credit system that they use to keep people in line. And apparently on this phone, you know, they didn't see anything wrong about asking for all this information. At least they asked me and told me. I presume that, well, who knows? I mean, maybe they're doing even more and not asking me about that. So I talked this week, yesterday actually, with the guy who invented Pretty Good Privacy, PGP, back in the 1900s. it was 1991, the 1990s. And he lives in Holland now. He's American, but he's very concerned about privacy. He always has been, more concerned now than ever. And I asked him, well, what do you use? He says, I use only an iPhone. He says, I just don't think Android phones, and this, by the way, when I talk to security and privacy researchers everywhere, this is universal. They will not use Android phones. When people go to hacker conventions, they don't take Android phones with them. They don't feel safe. Now, I have to say, this Huawei P20 immediately updated to the latest Google patches for Android. That's good. The security patches were in there. It does, at least in the U.S., probably not in China, but at least in the U.S., it does support the Android Play Store, and I was able to get all the Google apps on there and everything. But if privacy is a concern, and I know at the beginning of the show I talked a little bit about what Apple's doing in regards to privacy. They're just released an update to iOS that's going to prevent people from accessing your phone via the Lightning port if it hasn't been unlocked in an hour. Nobody can plug it in and get data out of it or use one of those password cracking tools. I have to say, if privacy is a concern, and remember, we put our lives in these phones, not just our location, but everything is in these phones. Increasingly, I'm of the opinion, while I love Android phones and I love many of the features that Android phones have that iPhones don't, there is nothing like what Apple's doing to protect your privacy. There really isn't. And increasingly, when I look at this phone from China, it's like, wow, wow, they don't seem to really worry much about privacy. It's not a concern, I guess. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. We don't just take questions, we take answers too. So if you hear something on this show and you say, I know, call. Absolutely. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. As long as I'm talking about products, I want to talk about Simply Safe. You know, I can't count the number of people we've set up with Simply Safe. I love Simply Safe. Here, let me show you. I got my new Simply Safe kit here. This is home security done right. They created Simply Safe to make it easier and more affordable for everybody to get the kind of home security you want. You know what? You can go to the wrong person. Then last year, the Better Business Bureau had more than 5,000 complaints about alarm companies. In fact, home security, I'm sad to say, is in the top 10% of most complained about industries. Simply Safe was created to fix that problem. They got rid of contracts. They got rid of hidden fees. They work hard to earn your business. And instead of relying on tricks and fine print, they make an awesome product that's very affordable. A company that relies on good service and great products, how rare is that? Here's our Simply Safe kit. Inside, I've got the base station. I love this new base station, by the way. It's impervious. A-plus rating, by the way, with the Better Business Bureau. For 10 years running, 40,000 five-star reviews online. Simply Safe is everything home security ought to be. And it is very affordable. Learn more today at simplysafe.com/twit. Simplysafe.com/twit. Here's the base unit. You cannot destroy this thing. You can hit it with a bat. You can cut the phone lines, cut the Wi-Fi. It's still going to phone home. And very affordable. $15 a month monitoring. That's a third what the other guys charge for the same monitoring. Simply Safe, and you install it yourself, which I kind of like because I don't want some guy traipsing through the house. All the sensors, easy to install. I'm making a mess here. This is, this is the keypad. Also, you can hit that with a bat, no problem. See how small these are? This is the entry sensor. So you put, and you can do it yourself. You just stick it up there, or you can, if you want, you can put screws in, and it's very easy to install. So you don't need to get somebody coming out and traipsing around. You have total control over it. Look how small that is. So this side goes on the windowsill. This side goes on the window or on the door. And you're monitoring, but they have all kinds of monitors. They have water for your leaks, for your water heater, your pipes. Here's a motion sensor. You put that in the hallway. Somebody comes down the hallway. When you're not home, you will know. Of course, you've got an emergency keypad, all the things you would want. Yard signals, window decals. I love having the big Simply Safe sign out front. You're going to want that too. They do everything, plus 24/7 interactive alarm monitoring and alerts. It's the best. Simply Safe. Check it out, simplysafe.com/twit. Protect your home and family with an A-plus home security system. A-plus with the Better Business Bureau, A-plus with me too. And I trust it so much, I've set up family members, friends, strangers. SimplySafe.com/twit. All right, now I have to put this all back because I got to pack it all up. This one I'm keeping. Keep on trucking. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. John in Atlanta. Hey, John. John, are you there? Press the button. Maybe we've lost John. I'll tell you what. Let me put John on hold. Casey just fell asleep. We've actually had that happen. And say hi to Caesar in Chula Vista. Caesar, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, welcome.
Hello. How are you doing, Leo?
I am great.
My call.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I called regarding. I have a daughter, 11 years old. She's everything that she does now from school, everything, they give you a website.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
It's incredible. No more books. I mean,
I know.
On email, everything, go to this website, do your homework here. Anyway.
That's all well and good if you've got internet and a computer at home. I worry about kids who don't.
Yes, definitely. And she has an old... she has an old e-machine, desktop, it serves purpose. So I'm trying to see what you can recommend for she's only in fifth grade. She just finished fifth grade.
So, you know, so the school doesn't have a recommendation. Do they don't have, do they have computers in the classroom?
No, they
that's interesting. So they really,
they use you know what they use? I went to the class a couple times and they have iPads and Chromebooks.
Well, so that's what I would recommend for your daughters, a Chromebook.
A Chromebook. Any particular one you think?
Yeah, there's a lot of good ones out there right now, but I'm a big fan of the Acer Chromebooks. They make some really high quality stuff, and you have a nice price range. That's the good thing about a Chromebook.
I'm familiar.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with Acer. They do make really, really good products,
yeah.
In my experience.
Yeah.
Any particular model you recommend?
Well, I would, if you can, go down to a Best Buy and take a look. Part of it is size. So they have an 11-inch Chromebook, and they have a 15-inch screen Chromebook. And I think if you can go with the 15-inch, that's a nice choice because you get a little more screen. But actually, I'm seeing it for $200, so that's not too bad. They have the Spin is their high-end Chromebook now, and that's a little more expensive. And that's one that can convert into, you know, you can tent it, you can flip it over, convert it to a tablet. Those are really nice. I'm also now seeing Chromebook tablets, and I'm not sure I would recommend that yet because these are very new. Acer has the Chromebook Tab 10. It's getting very good reviews, but and maybe, you know, because your daughter is used to tablets like the iPad, she would like it. It comes with a pencil, you know, so she can draw on it. It's a little expensive, but I'm seeing people who really like it quite a bit. It's lightweight. It's pretty durable. Has a stylus. So I think sometimes for a fifth and a sixth grader, the ability to draw stuff is a real desirable point. All these Chromebooks now support the Android store, which means you're getting more apps. You're getting millions of apps to choose from, including a lot of great classroom stuff. If most of the stuff that the classroom, the school is giving her is web-based, Chromebook will be fine because it's, of course, got a great browser. It's got a Chrome browser in it. So you might look at, it's a little more expensive, the Chrome. I would say if you can go to a Best Buy and look at them and get her opinion on them, the Chromebook Tab 10. Yeah, Chromebook Tab 10 is about $329 list, but it's got more RAM. It's a 4 gig RAM. It's a little smaller. It's 9.7, which she might like because it's more portable. It's only a pound, a little more than a pound. I think this would be also a very good choice. I'm actually tempted myself. I'm a big fan of the Chromebooks, and I think for school, there's nothing better because it's safe, right? Secure. She's going to be less tempted to play games on it. Or to, you know, to get sucked into, you know, of course you can still watch YouTube and all of that. But I think this is a really nice, it's got a USB-C charging port, but you can also connect it to displays and data, which is nice.
They have camera, do they? Do they have a camera? They sure do.
And I think the camera, you want the camera because, it's got both a front camera and a rear camera.
Great. Yeah, my sons, that's why I... She has older brothers, and they Skype, and they're in the military, so that's how they talk to her.
Perfect for that. And you can get Skype in the Android store. And I also think people, kids that age, often want to make videos. And so having a rear camera that's fairly good, it's only 5 megapixels, good enough, though, for 1080p video, that's nice. She can. I notice kids doing that all the time with their iPads. I think that's a great additional feature.
Great. Oh, thank you so much. And I have, and then the other one was my personal. I have a personal laptop. I had it for a while. It served its purpose, but I want to upgrade. I have an old Windows 7 Asus K52.
Very nice. Also,
I actually upgraded it to a solid state, a couple years ago, and works great. I'm looking into something to upgrade. I don't know. I know you mentioned the XPS.
What's your price range?
You know, I don't have one. If I have to spend $1,000, I'll be, $1,200, $1,300. I don't know.
I'm a big fan. In fact, I'm using it right now. Of the Lenovo ThinkPads, if you want something that's going to last a long time, they are really robust. Not the cheaper Lenovos, but the ThinkPad line. This is the old IBM line that Lenovo bought some years ago. And they just continue to be really great keyboards, great trackpads. I think these are my favorite Windows 10 machines. I still like the Dell XPS line. It's a little pricey. The advantage the XPS has is is almost bezel-less on the screen. So this, you get more screen size in a smaller footprint.
What size do they come, that thing fast?
Any size you want. They even have 17 inches.
I was a big fan of I always liked the bigger screen, but lately, for some reason, I like the... It seems that 13 inches nice
they have,
to carry around
have,
with you.
They have, they have 13s. They have, I think they're 14s, but the same. I like the T series. That's a little less expensive. Those are the business versions of the ThinkPads. If you want to get the sexy version, it's more expensive. But then look at the X series. The Carbon X is beautiful. But I personally like all. I want all the connectors. I want the USB ports. I want the HDMI. I want the Ethernet ports. The T series is really good. I think the 580 just came out. I have a 480 right here that I'm using. I just love it. So,
and I can put and you can actually plug a DVD
absolutely. On a USB DVD drive, so you don't lose that capability. I wouldn't build one in because you're not going to use it that often, but it's nice to have one on USB. This also, this T-Series, you can put a second battery in and get all-day battery life. I think these are more like tanks. They're not sexy as much as very utilitarian. So lately, I've been just a big fan of the Lenovo ThinkPad series, particularly the T-Series. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy. More calls right after this. He's been everywhere, man. I ain't talking about Johnny Cash. I'm talking about Johnny Jet. He is our travel guru at johnnyjet.com. Joins us every week to help us travel better with technology. Today, he joins us from Delray Beach, Florida, where it's, 100 degrees in the shade?
No, it's not that warm. I think it was 87 degrees. It's hot and humid.
It's hotter here. It's like 100 degrees in Petaluma, but it's a dry heat.
Well, here is a wet heat, and it's beautiful, and the ocean is warm. I'm at the Delray Beach Marriott, and
nice.
In all of Florida, including this place, you can get some really good summer rates. I just checked, $150 a night here. But if you want a cheap place to go in the summer, come down to Florida.
Because it's too hot. Nobody wants to be in Florida in the summertime.
Well, everyone would rather be up in New England where the weather's great because most of the people are snowbirds. So.
Right.
So the rates are cheap, and you don't have to fight for a pool chair. Although today it seemed pretty busy down by the pool, but normally you don't have to.
Nice. Sounds like you're having fun. You're visiting. I know you're visiting your dad who lives down there.
Yep, I was visiting with my dad.
How's he doing? He's doing pretty well.
You know, 2 weeks ago he was in the hospital. Today we just played golf.
Nice.
And I just posted a little video of him on my Facebook, so he's doing great.
I saw him driving the golf cart. I thought that was cute.
Yeah, that was the first time he's driven in like 10 years. And, nice. You know, he was like a kid. He had a smile on his face. Aww. Like, you know, I did when I was 16 years old driving for the first time.
Yep. You know, by the time you're dad's age, people might not be driving anything at all.
Yeah.
You know, you might just be riding around in a self-driving vehicle.
You know, things are changing. Actually, this week I was in Washington, D.C. for a couple nights. I went down with Hilton Hotels, and they were showing me about all their new innovations. And we went into their innovation gallery, and their CEO talked to us. But they have some really cool things that they're testing out. One is called a Beam Smart Entertainment. Have you seen this one?
I have. I own one, I think.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
So they're talking about maybe even taking TVs out of their hotel rooms. I mean, it's a big maybe. But they're like, you know what? There might not be TVs in the future. They might just give people the Beam.
And then they'd watch it on what? Their computer?
On the wall.
Just project it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And they had all kinds of things. They had this thing called Nightingale Sound Sleeper. They had a new Calm Deep Sleep. Sleeper is supposed to really help you sleep a lot better or deeper.
It's a competitive market, isn't it? Nowadays, you got to be – I saw the hotels – a number of hotel chains are going to start putting in. There's a special new Amazon Echo for hospitality.
Yeah, that was my next thing.
Tell me about that. I think that was really interesting.
Yeah, and actually, when I just walked into this hotel, I'm friends with the concierge. She's like, you know, make sure you let these people know that Echoes cannot replace the concierge because, you know, if there's an emergency,
no, but
like
you can
just
say, I would like to order ham and eggs sent to room, my
exactly.
room, and that's good enough.
Yeah, for sure.
You're not going to say I want tickets to Cats.
No, but for these Amazon Echoes, so they're going to say, you know, open and close the blinds.
Yeah.
What's the temperature?
Yeah.
Set a wake up call. You know, have some music or whatever it is. Have the housekeeping bring more towels up here. So that's a beautiful thing, I think.
I can't wait. And it resets when you check out. So and the hotel doesn't get any information about you. I think this is a
people are worried about the information. They're worried about how much they're going to be listening to you, spying.
Oh, I don't worry about that. They're not calling home unless you say the trigger word.
Right.
People forget you got a phone in your pocket with a microphone, camera, GPS. I mean, you got it in your pocket. They don't need to turn on the Echo. They can follow you everywhere if they want to listen.
And some of them do. Actually, some of the airlines, I think someone was telling me, one of the airlines, they want you to, give access to wherever you're going so they know if you're flying the competitors and how many times you're in airports and not flying their airline. So then they know to send you.
Your phone is absolutely a spy device. If you enable location tracking in your United Airlines app, who knows what they're going to. That means they can track you all the time, not just when you're on United.
Right. Yeah. But one of the hotels, actually, well, Hilton's smart because they partnered with Amazon. And now what they're doing is they're setting up the Amazon lockers in some of their hotels. So you can deliver food within 2 hours or have, if you forget your microphone or your mouse.
I can order Gino's North Pizza from Chicago delivered to the locker. I don't know.
But when I travel, you know, I usually don't use hotel room service because it's expensive. The food's not that good, and it's not really local.
Yeah.
Instead, I go on Postmates or Uber Eats or whatever and have it delivered, and you get something local, and it's usually better and a lot cheaper.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's what I do.
We're learning. Postmates or Uber. You have to find the one that's available in that neck of the woods, but.
Yeah. And down here, it's called Delivery Dudes. I used that 2 weeks ago when I was here.
Delivery Dudes.
Yeah.
Hey, it's the Delivery Dude, man.
Extra.
I'm here. I brought your pizza. So give us every week, Johnny joins us with a site and an app. What do you got for us this week?
All right. So actually, here's one.
PetAirways.com. Pet Airways? What are you talking about?
No, these guys used to be in business between 2009 and 2011. Unfortunately, they went under, but they're trying to come back, and they're actually having some kind of fundraiser right now.
Is it a plane just for your pet?
Exactly. It's a small plane, but they don't allow humans except the pilots, obviously, and the person who takes care of the pets.
I don't want to be the flight attendant on that flight.
But supposedly they flew 10,000 animals. They call them passengers.
Passengers. PetAirways.com. But they're not back yet. They're trying to get back.
Not back yet. So I'm just mentioning them because to keep an eye out on them. Hopefully they'll get their funding. And some people can actually contribute now and get some shares of it. But, there's a lot of pet fanatics out there and pet lovers. And I'm a pet lover. Although I travel too much, we don't have pets.
And it would be nice, even as a not – I have pets. I'm not taking my cats anywhere. But it would be nice not to have to fight peacocks in the main cabin anymore. A lot of people bring in their companion pets.
They're cracking down on those, the peacocks. And United, actually Delta this week, just banned pit bulls.
Pit bulls are sweet dogs. They get a bad rap because people train them to be killers. But they're sweet dogs. They're nice dogs.
They can be. Yes, they can be. But, but you can't bring your peacock or your pet snake anymore on these airlines. But
yeah, right on.
That's in the cabin. But, some of the bigger animals that you do not want to put in the cargo hold, especially in the summertime or freezing cold.
That's terrible, yeah.
This is a great alternative, so keep your eye out.
PetAirways.com.
Yes.
Nice.
And then I got an app if we have time.
Yeah.
It's called Rescuer, RESCUER. It's only for Android right now. They said they're working on the iOS. But speaking about your phone spying on you just a few minutes ago, how it has access to everything. If you say you can set it up to say a keyword, a key phrase across the room, and it will silently send out pictures and audio and a GPS. It's to let people know, 911 or whoever you're calling. You could also use your volume buttons and do a certain way. I think it's up and down, up, and then it will automatically do the same thing, set out all your coordinates, or you can have you give access to your friends or loved ones a passcode, and they can tell you where exactly you are.
I like it. I like it. Rescuer for Android. It's free. And unfortunately, it says it's incompatible with all my devices. So I have a few Android phones, but maybe that's because I'm not logged in. Maybe that. But check it out. A lot of good reviews. They say it's a woman safety app, but it could be for men too. Anybody wants to stay safe. I like that.
Sure.
Rescuer app. And Johnny Jet, well, you have a great time in Delray Beach.
Thank you. I'm only here for a few more hours.
Oh, all right. And then
I'm off again. I'm on a plane in a few hours.
And we'll find out where he goes. But you can find out if you follow him on Twitter, Johnny Jet, on Instagram, Johnny Jet, or go to his website, johnnyjet.com. Thank you, Johnny. Safe travels, as always.
Thank you. Thank you. One T, by the way. I'm not related to Joan.
Only one. No relation to Joan. He used to be Johnny Jetski. If that tells you anything.
But I'm not Polish, so I dropped the ski.
Thanks, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones right after this. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you.
That sounded great. I think we fixed the problem. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for sending me this.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you got it. Did we send it to Toronto? Where did we send it?
No, you sent it to here, to Florida.
To Florida. Yeah, it's hard for us to send overseas, so. Good.
Well, not really overseas, Toronto, but it is over a lake.
Internationally. You're right. It isn't overseas, is it? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Now let's try John in Atlanta, see if he's awake. Hi, John.
Hey. Leo, hey. Can you hear me now?
I hear you now. Welcome.
Well, I tell you, I guess I've been spoiled calling into your show because I'm usually first.
Oh, you didn't make it this time, but you got in.
I did not.
That's all that matters. So, thanks for hanging on.
Somehow my phone went on mute, but that's okay.
Oh, yeah, that happens.
Anyway, I was following up with you a couple months ago. I told you I'd purchased the Owl Cam based on your strong recommendation.
It's a dashboard cam that shoots forward and backwards and has some nice features. It's always connected. It's got LTE built in. I've been using it since we talked about it. Tell me what you think.
I'm really liking it. I don't have any incidents to report, thank goodness.
I know. I have mixed feelings about that because neither do I, and I keep waiting for something to happen so I can send a clip back.
I know. And I almost invited something one day because I was going down this familiar road that had two lanes, and I knew the right lane was going to end, and there's signs that say it's going to end. And so this car pulled up to me when there was only going to be a few feet left before the lane ended. And I thought, I'm going to see what they do. And I kept my eye there, and sure enough, they just decided to come right into my lane where I had to slam on my brakes. And, fortunately, I didn't hit them. But I thought, boy, this would have been a great capture for the...
I guess they have impact sensing so that if you do get in an accident, they will immediately send pictures back to the server. So that if something bad happens, you don't have to make a note of it. But you also have the capability of recording clips by just saying, okay, presto, and it will start send a clip back.
I actually played with the editing software. I'm not sure if you're liking their editing software, but, you know, where you can do a 5-minute clip or 10-minute. So when I got home, I downloaded that, video and played around with the editing piece and, got that part where I almost wrecked just to show people, what I can record on that Owl Cam.
Yeah, it sends clips back to this Owl server, but it also has a built-in memory, and you can record up to the capacity of the memory, and then it'll record over on top of it. And it saves it if anything interesting has happened. I'm just looking, scrubbing through it, and nothing at all interesting has happened to my camera since I got out of the car. But that's nice that you have it, right?
Yeah, and I don't know if you're noticing when they make the software changes how some of the messages are starting to change.
I have noticed that, and they do that. That's the other reason, and I always recommend this if you get an internet-connected device. You want something, because it's on the internet, it's at risk. You want something that's automatically going to update itself, and the Owl definitely is doing it. It's a brand-new device, so it makes sense that it's going to have lots of updates.
Yeah, when it used to sense you, even if you had your key in your phone, assist you and just started sending out the alert, you know, possible intruder or something.
I know.
Now that method has changed to possible impact detected.
Yeah, but and no, that's changed again. You got to get the new firmware. It says driver detected.
No, I got that too, Leo. I noticed that when I got in the car last night that it did say driver detected.
Driver detected.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I like that because now it's not shining those white lights on me. Those white lights, when they come on, you have to admit, are pretty bright.
I agree. Then that's for if somebody breaks into your car, the lights come on and record the break-in. And even if they steal the camera, it will upload the video to the OWL servers. So you'll get nice video of somebody stealing your camera. They say they'll replace your camera if it gets stolen. I think this is kind of a, you know, there's a lot of dashboard cams. This one's pricier than most because it includes the LTE coverage for a year or something like that. But I think that there's, you know, I like having a camera just in case.
Yeah, now, one thing I've noticed with the guests that ride in my car, there's a couple of people, when they ride, they don't like being recorded. They're kind of one of those.
They say, we're just going to all have to get used to that, aren't we?
Well, the nice thing is, too, is that if you just touch the bottom of the screen, you can easily turn off the inside camera, which I like that feature.
Right.
So it's only recording on the outside.
Right.
Anybody that's a little uncomfortable in my car, of course, they could drive or...
Well, that's interesting. So you've had people get in the car and say, what is that? Is that a camera? Turn that off.
Exactly.
Wow.
I've had a couple of paranoid neighbors going to dinner that said, I don't like that, and really got upset. And so I just... you know, turned off the bottom camera just to
how interesting.
Ease them.
Yeah, I haven't encountered anybody like that, but I don't take people in my car much. So
we're in the dog days. You know, we're here in Atlanta. We're in the dog days of summer, so I'm liking the fact that it turns itself automatically when it feels like the car is too hot.
Yep.
So that's happening.
It protects itself.
Now.
Yeah. Yep. I noticed that if you park in the sun or whatever, it'll turn itself off to protect itself. Yeah.
And here in Georgia, come July 1st. A new law takes effect where we're not allowed to hold phones while we're driving, which
right.
I'm tickled. I don't know if California is doing
that. Oh, we've had that for a couple of years. Doesn't stop people, but if they get caught, there's a big fine.
Yeah, so hopefully, you know, if you're in an accident or something with somebody, the camera's also going to kind of pick up, you know, based on, I guess, where the impact is, that somebody had a phone.
Well, that's what one of the things, it's a mixed bag, but it is recording outside and it's recording you. So if you were inattentive, the insurance company would have record of that. On the other hand, you know, I've had a case where I ran into something that was on the highway. I would love to have, because they said, well, you mustn't have been paying attention. I would love to have the video to say, well, look, I'm watching. Watch that thing fall off the truck. Watch me hit it, even though I tried to avoid it. They'd have the complete record. So I guess it could cut both ways, depending on how good a driver you are. You know, remember the Uber, terrible Uber story of the Uber self-driving vehicle that killed a pedestrian a few months ago. They now know, because everything's recorded, that the driver, the safety driver, we knew she was inattentive because we saw a video of her looking down a lot. She was watching The Voice on her phone while she was driving. So a camera in the car can catch bad behavior as well as good behavior. But on the other hand, if I'm a teenager, man, I would put this thing in the car for sure.
Yeah, I'm very pleased with it so far.
Good.
I mean, for, you know, what it is. And on that note, I'd like to, if you wouldn't mind, do a shout out to a lot of the other products that I've purchased based on your inspiration or plug.
Thank you.
To alert your advertisers, hey, this is a really great place to advertise.
Yes,
for some of it. But anyway, so I'm going to see if I can top some of your other callers because I've heard them go through some lists. But anyway, I personally have purchased LastPass based
Thank
on your
you.
Recommendation.
A sponsor.
FastMail.
Yes.
FastMail.
They're not a sponsor, but I do recommend them.
I know you recommend them, and I've been very pleased with them. Synology NAS. I have. I'm
also not a sponsor. We got to get these guys to buy some ads.
Unfortunately, we still listen to you. The DAS keyboard. I don't know if they're a sponsor.
No. No. But, you know, this is the thing. I used to listen to radio. And in fact, every once in a while, somebody would call and say, can I mention a name? And you'd hear this on radio. Well, I don't mention any brand names. I want to talk about specific brands because we need to help people choose good stuff. And when stuff's bad, tell them it's bad.
Right, and I don't any of these products I'm mentioning. I've been very pleased with. I've ordered from Fracture Main.
They are a sponsor.
Very pleased with them. Very pleased with them. I've got six Scotty vests, by the way. Because I just
they used to be a sponsor, not a sponsor anymore.
Right, and I saw you on a show one time, not this show, but another show I was watching, and you had a Duluth Trading Leather travel bag.
I love my Duluth stuff. I love it.
So I bought one too.
I wear their underwear. I wear their pants. I wear that bag is a great bag. Yeah, unfortunately, they're not an advertiser either. In fact, it sounds like mostly I'm selling you stuff that I don't get any money for, but that's okay.
I know.
That's okay. I don't want to be a shill all the time. Hey, I got to take a break for a sponsor, but I thank you for the call. And I will mention that the Owl Cam, which is not a sponsor either, is $349. That's expensive, but they have a money back 30-day guarantee, and it's owlcam.com. If you're looking at a dashboard cam, it's more expensive than some of the others, but has more features than some of the others. And I kept it. I bought it, and I like it. Hey, thanks for the call. It's great to talk to you, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a break. Come back with more calls right after this. Our show today, let's talk about wine. Let's talk about wine. And this is not wine made in China, but it is wine made all over the world. I'm a member of Wink, and I love Wink. It's the best way to discover new wines you will love. When you go to TryWink, TryWinc.com/tech guy, you can take their taste test, their palate profile quiz. It'll ask you simple things like, how do you like your coffee? Or do you not like coffee at all? Do you like blueberries? Do you like peppers? Do you like mushrooms? Different taste profiles to give you some recommendations. And then they'll send you wines curated to your taste. You get to pick how many red, how many white. I'm all red myself. But I tell you what, they have a summer water rosé right now that I would love a nice chilled bottle of that right now. That is awesome. You actually should include that in your box. It's not just a wine club. It's a wine company. They work directly with top winemakers and growers from around the world. They make all their own wine. Let's see. I got a Wink box today. The nice thing about this is instead of getting the same wine all the time, you can try different wines, find wines you like. Because you get four bottles a month, and of course you could take a month off anytime you want. It's nice. You got a couple of dinners, maybe a bottle to put away for the future in your wine cellar, maybe a bottle to share with friends. It's always nice to have some delicious wine. Let's see what we have here. Forma de Vida. This is bottled by Wink. All of it is made by Wink, but it's a Tempranillo from Lodi. Oh, that's nice. I love Tempranillo. Here's a white Sauvignon Blanc from Santa Barbara County. They're from all over the world, the best winemakers. Oh, here's an Italian, Frappato. I love the labels, too. They get great local artists making these beautiful labels. And you'll be proud to bring it as a gift to a friend. Cape Route, a Chenin Blanc from South Africa. So look at that. WINC, TryWinc.com. No membership fees, skip any month, cancel any time. Shipping is covered, and if you don't like a bottle, no problem. They'll send you another bottle. No questions asked. You don't have to return the old bottle. I love Wink. Great way to relax in the summertime with that summer water rosé, to celebrate with friends, to enjoy a fine meal. Sit back and relax and enjoy your Wink. Why settle for the same bottle of wine you always get? Discover great wine today. Go to TryWinc.com/tech guy for $20 off your first shipment. TryWinc.com/tech guy. This is all we get now. And I'm so happy with the Wink. Loving the Wink. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, privacy, security, all that stuff. Everything to do with anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. If you hear us talking about something, a product or a site or a solution to a problem, you can always find out more at the website because we write it all down. James DeRuvo writes it all down for later consumption. That way you don't have to write it down while you're driving around town or whatever you're doing today. The website is techguylabs.com, and you can go there and add your thoughts. So if you disagree or I get something wrong or you've got additional information, that's a good place to do it. Techguylabs.com. It's much more effective than just shouting at the radio. Never found that useful. I can't hear you. Rich on the line from It must be very hot today, Tucson, Arizona. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. You're right. It is pretty darn hot out here in the desert Southwest.
Woo! Summertime.
Yeah, definitely. Once June hits, it's pretty much all over for 4 months. First, I got to say thank you. You saved me so much money.
Oh, gosh. How?
The last time I talked to you was like 6 months or a year ago, and I was having trouble with my TV set. The sound was going out. It was like slowly fading out.
Ooh.
And you said, well, if you've got an optical audio in on the TV, but for a TV of that age, you probably don't. But I went ahead and I looked, and I did. And so I just bought a sound bar, and
nice.
I was able to, instead of having to replace the whole TV, I just plugged the sound bar in, and it's been great ever since.
Wonderful. I'm so glad that worked.
I know that you like to spend people's money, but thank you for saving me a lot of money.
Well, we spent a little bit to save a lot, so that was worth it. Good.
It was.
I'm glad to know that
my
worked.
My current situation is that I'm an audiobook narrator, and I just finished building a vocal booth that is a lot smaller than where I used to record. So I used to have my laptop outside my recording space, and I had an HDMI cable and a wireless keyboard and trackpad in the space. But now, since the booth is so small, I can't really use this for a desk. And so what I want to do is I want to have my monitor in here, but I want to have my laptop outside on a desk in the room, and I want to have another monitor on the desk, and I want the displays to be exactly the same. So I started looking up HDMI splitters, and I found that there's a whole ton of them out there that you can buy, but what I couldn't find was whether or not what I want to do is actually going to be doable on my 2012 MacBook Air, which is old and creaky, and I want to make sure that running two different monitors that are simply displaying the laptop screen in two different places is not going to cause some kind of problem with the laptop.
Yeah. So, you want to have two monitors. It wouldn't be okay just to have the Air display outside and the monitor inside the booth.
With my aging eyes, I would really rather have a big monitor.
Big monitor on both. Yeah. Cause I know for sure you could do that. Just have an external monitor in the booth. The splitters, yeah, it should work. I mean, sometimes it can degrade the signal a little bit, but a splitter doesn't require anything of the MacBook Air. It's doing it all. That's the difference between having two monitors that are mirrored and one external monitor that is split. They are mirrored, but they're split. So, yeah, I think you shouldn't have any. If you can get an external monitor run off that Air, and I'm pretty sure you can, it's got a mini display port, right? Yeah.
It does, and so that's what I'm using. Is I'm using a mini display port to HDMI adapter.
Yeah.
And so I was just going to use that same adapter going into a splitter, and then have the powered splitter, go to two separate monitors.
Yeah, the key is
one
powered
and one outside.
You said the right word. Yeah. Powered's important because you really can't just split the signal. You need to kind of amplify it a little bit. So I think that's a great solution, and they're not expensive. So I'm seeing one on Amazon for $15. So.
That's what I saw, was anywhere from 15 to 50, depending on what you're looking for. And I don't need four ports. I just need two. I just wanted to make sure that, because I didn't find any reference to this. I just wanted to make sure that it's not going to make the MacBook Air drive.
It doesn't do anything more to the Air. The Air doesn't know from one monitor. It thinks it's just as powerful one monitor. So, yeah, that'd be fine. Yeah, that's actually a good idea. What's the resolution on that external monitor? Because I love MacBook Airs, but they're so low resolution on their internal screen, I just can't bear it.
Fortunately, that hasn't really been a big problem for me because I use a fairly big screen just so that I can see things better.
Yeah.
So what I'm using on my Dell monitor inside the booth right now is 1600 by 900.
Yeah, that's about, I think, what the... I think it's 1280 by 900, but that's not super high res, but if it's okay for you, that's fine. I might recommend, basically, you've got a teleprompter is what you're doing, right? Do you need keyboard access, or would it be enough just to have a knob in the booth? Because there are companies that make USB knobs, the Griffin PowerMate.
Yeah, I really need the keyboard.
Okay.
I need it in both places, and so I'm using a Logitech Logitech wireless, and then a Bluetooth trackpad.
Perfect. Now I've got to ask you about the audiobooks. Who do you read audiobooks for?
A few different places. I've done quite a few on ACX. I'm sure you're familiar with ACX.
Yeah.
And I've done a lot for Pitchstone Publishing. And I just went to APAC, the Audio Publishers Association Conference in New York a few weeks ago. And there are several people I'm going to be contacting, having been there and met a lot of people. And I also do a podcast on audiobook production, has introduced me to a whole bunch of people. So, it's great. I know you listen to audiobooks and love them.
I am a huge audiobook fan. You've got a beautiful voice. ACX is cool because you choose the book you want to narrate. So,
and there are options.
Right. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Although my experience is it's not the beautiful voice, it's the acting ability, oddly enough. Because there are audiobook readers who don't have particularly great voices, but because they can bring a book to life.
Absolutely.
I'm thinking of Roy Dotrice, who does the Game of Thrones books. His voice is a little weird and gravelly, but man, does he bring those books to life.
Yeah, it is all about the acting.
It is, isn't it?
It's funny because there are a lot of people who come. I know that you have a radio background. There are a lot of people who come from radio, and a lot of times they have to kind of unlearn what they've learned to actually do the voice acting part.
Yes,
because it's a very, very different medium.
It is indeed, and it's not about announcing. It's about acting. Are you an actor by training?
So not when I was younger. I got into acting on stage about 20 years ago, and then I just kind of took off from there.
Nice.
And I've been doing audiobooks for about 4 years now. I did some pro bono audiobook work about 10 years ago.
Great way to get started, yeah.
It is, yeah, it really is.
I've done a couple of them for friends, and I did a short one for Audible, and I have huge respect for anybody who can do it because it's actually – it sounds like, oh, you just read a book. How hard could that be? It's hard. It's really hard. What's the name of your podcast? I want to listen to it.
Sure, yeah. It's called The Audiobook Speakeasy. And it's all about just sitting down for an hour with somebody in the audiobook business and having a drink and talking about their role in the audiobook production process. So I talk to narrators and narration coaches and engineers. I haven't yet, but I'm going to very soon have like a power listener on who listens to like an audiobook a day. I mean, she is constantly listening to audiobooks.
I'm not that fast. I'm not that fast. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. I listen to the Audiobook Speakeasy podcast. Looks really great. Rich, it's nice. Yeah, it's nice to talk to you and good luck. I look forward to hearing something of yours on Audible.
Thank you. Yeah. Check me out. And there's. I'm sure that there are some in there. I know you like science stuff. I got some science stuff in there. I've got some various different fiction things. And the podcast is just a lot of fun. So
I bet it is.
Somebody who sounds interesting and have a drink and join us.
I appreciate it. I will. And thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it, Rich. Yeah, I love audiobooks. It's really, for me, it's brought reading back into my life because it's, you know, I mean, you may know what I'm talking about. When you get in bed, you got a book and you get about a halfway through the page and half a page a day, it's just not going to work. No, you can't keep track of it. So the nice thing about audiobooks is I can listen while I'm in the car and, you know, doing housework and stuff like that. I'm a big fan. And that's one of the reasons I love podcasts and radio. Let's not forget, right? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. More calls coming up right after this. Winter is coming. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I wish. 88 Ask Leo. First tech guy of the summer. Hope you're enjoying it. Go to line four now. Jim in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. You know, listening to your show got me sidetracked because I only read audiobooks because I'm legally blind. And when you started talking about Jon Snow, I've been waiting for the next book to come out.
Of Game of Thrones, yeah.
Yeah, I've read all the books, but there's another one to come for like 2 years now.
Oh, more than that. And I have a feeling it's going to be more years than that. Because George R.R. Martin, who wrote the Game of Thrones series, has written five of them so far. I think he's kind of lost his way. I'll be honest with you. I think fame and fortune and the TV show have just distracted him. We need to lock him into a tower. sit him down and say, finish it.
Yeah. Finish it. I kept telling my friends, I can't believe that Jon Snow's dead. I just can't believe it. He's going to have to come back some way. So, anyway. And then
you're obviously a little behind, but I'm not going to. He just got married. Isn't that sweet? He just got married in Scotland to the woman in the TV show who plays, I think Ygritte is her name. She's the barbarian who shot him with an arrow. And now they're married. So they're going to, that's a.
So you mean in real life they got married?
They got married in real life, and it's cute. Oh, no, this has nothing to do with the book. This is in real, actors. Okay. The actors got married.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what we were talking about. I don't know what happens in the books. In fact, I think the TV show is now departed pretty much 100% from the books.
Yeah, I never have watched the TV show.
No, if you heard the books, you're really getting, I think, a better experience, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, it's much better. I love it.
Yeah, really beautifully
read. It was interesting hearing your previous callers who does read books. I've read over about 1,100 to 1,200 books already.
Wow.
When I say read, I listen to them. And that's in the last 10 years. So it's a lot of books.
I use the same term, listened. And I call it reading, but a lot of people say, no, it's not reading.
Yeah.
But it is reading. And for you, it's the only option you have. So I think that's fantastic. I think audiobooks are great.
Yeah, let me tell you what's going on with me. One thing, this is related, but I download my books from the Library of Congress. They have a site I can go to because I'm legally blind.
Awesome.
Okay, and I've been doing this for 15 years. No problems at all. However, on my computer, all of a sudden, in the last 2 months, I cannot download a book. So I get on the site, I can do the searches, I do everything like I always did, but everything is extremely slow, and I will not download, no matter how long I wait for the book to download. Usually it takes about 2 or 3 minutes. I'll wait 20, 30, 40 minutes, and it'll never download.
This is the National Library Service that the Library of Congress offers for Braille and talking books.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's great service. They have quite a few books. Well, have you listened to all 1,100 books from the NLS?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? That's really fantastic.
But I've narrowed it down. Here's what happened. I had a guy that knows computer stuff locally here, and he voluntarily helped me.
Good.
We found out my computer had upgraded. I use Windows 7. It upgraded to Internet Explorer 11, and then 11 will, for some reason, will not let me download. So this guy took me back to Internet Explorer 8. And everything works fine. It's fast. It downloads. But I go to some sites, and they say, you need to upgrade your browser.
I don't know if he did you any favors. That is a very insecure version of Internet Explorer. And you really should use a more modern version. You're saying you're using Windows 7?
I'm using Windows 7.
So did you try? Oh, I guess Edge is only in 10, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know,
I tried Google Chrome.
And you did try Chrome.
I tried Firefox. And here's the other problem I have. Those work, but because I'm legally blind, I use a program called Zoom Text.
Right.
And it reads and magnifies the screen for me. So Zoom Text will not work with Chrome or Firefox. So I've called and talked to the company and all that, but I don't know what to do at this point.
I'm not sure why IE 11, which is the current version of Internet Explorer and the one you should be using for security, I'm not sure why it wouldn't download books. You know, unfortunately, I can't get into NLS because, you know, I don't qualify.
Sure.
So I'm looking at it right now, but I don't know if I could see what the issue is.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why IE 11 wouldn't be able to do it. Did your friend try?
It goes in, but it will not allow the actual download to occur.
I wonder if that's a security setting. That's interesting. Can you right click and say download as?
I tried that. It just won't do it. It's like it doesn't get the command. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I know. You click and nothing happens.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, it's driving me kind of crazy.
I don't blame you. I mean, I don't suppose the Library of Congress, well, they do have a phone number. Maybe.
Oh, I called them.
What did they say?
When I first called them, they said, well, we were having trouble with our site, but we just fixed it the last few days. So give it a couple more days and it should be working. Well, that was 2 months ago. And then they were going to call me back twice, and I guess they're kind of busy. And
you know, I'll tell you what. I have a friend who's the acting administrator of the U.S. Digital Service. One of the things they do is they take government websites that aren't working. They transform the VA website. I'm going to send a note to Matt Cutts and say, hey, can you take a look at the Library of Congress's site and help them make it work? Because it isn't working right now. It does sound like a JavaScript error. It sounds like poor site coding. And unfortunately, sometimes these sites just don't have the resources to do it right, you know, like commercial sites do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let me send a note to Matt, though. I don't know if they that's interesting. It should work for IE 11. That's the most recent version. You should never have to regress to earlier versions of IE 8 is very insecure, all sorts of flaws. In fact, I just saw a study that said that if you're using a modern browser, you don't have to worry about these. We used to talk about these all the time, these exploit kits, because none of them are vulnerable to any of the exploits available in the exploit kits. Unfortunately, IE 8 is.
Yeah.
So you're.
I tried IE 11, excuse me, 10, and it went back to 10 at one point. I tried that and could not download with 10 even.
Yeah, it sounds like that's a problem with the site, and it's really kind of a shame. I'm sure the Library of Congress doesn't have much budget for this kind of thing. And
yeah.
They're, you know, whoever coded this wasn't doing a good job. That's why the USDS is around, because a lot of government websites are terrible.
I know, and they're not that, what is it, 503 compliant?
Right, and they have to be ADA compliant.
Yeah.
You know, they're required to by law, but then they don't get any budget, and they don't, they contract these out sometimes to independent contractors. That's what happened. This all started with the Affordable Care Act site, which, as you may remember, was a nightmare. They had a bunch of different contractors doing it. So a bunch of Silicon Valley web design gurus got together and said, look, they just went in as a strike force. That's how the USDS was started. The United States Digital Service was started as a kind of a strike force of smart people from Silicon Valley who took government sites and said, no, this has got to be done right, and fixed them. And so they fixed the ACA site, then they fixed the Veterans Affairs site. Maybe they need to do the LOC site.
Congress.
Yeah, I'll send a note to Matt. He's the acting director.
Tell them to look at the page, too, the video, not the video, the pictures. There's no contrast. Even when I magnify, they can barely find
ridiculous.
The fields.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is an address for the Library of Congress for the ADA. You might want to send this to them, ada@loc.gov, and say, dudes, you are not 508 compliant. You need to do this. You need to fix this. So it says the Library of Congress is making every effort, but if you are a person with a disability and have trouble using our website, please tell us about the problem. Email ada@loc.gov.
Okay.
So I would do that for sure.
ADA, American Disability Act, I guess.
Yeah, ada@loc.gov.
Loc.gov.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe they'll give you some, because they're legally required to do so.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they have a little window of time, and I'm sure they have very little budget. And then I'll send a note to Matt.
All right. I appreciate that, Leo.
My pleasure. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Hey, 1,100 books. That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, I don't watch TV, and I don't, you know.
And you're so much happier, you know?
Yeah, I am happier.
I love audiobooks. I listen
to radio a lot, though, too.
No, radio's great. Podcasts are great. Audiobooks are great. We live, oddly enough, in a golden age of audio.
Yep.
Isn't that weird? Who would have thunk it?
I have an internet radio, actually two, from Grace.
Love those Grace radios. Yeah, I gave my mom one.
And I love it. That's what I listen to.
Yeah. You can get thousands of stations all over the world.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you listen to spoken word on the Grace?
Say what?
Any spoken word stations?
Well, I listen to KFI.
There you go.
Every day.
That's a good one.
I listen to some of the local stations.
Good.
I have Pandora.
There's some BBC stations. There's some audiobook stations. Oh, there's some interesting stuff. Hey, I got to run. Thank you for the call, though. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye.
All right. Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Talking a little more with our previous caller, I was glad to see that the Library of Congress has a whole page devoted to accessibility, as they should. I mean, that really is part of the mission, isn't it, of the Library of Congress? Not only to gather all of the books in the world and all the information together, but also to make it accessible to people with varying abilities. And so if you go to loc.gov/accessibility, they have lots of information there, including a mobile app, which might be the solution. It's called Bard, the NLS Braille and Audio Reading Download book. And it's available on iOS and Android and Amazon Fire devices. So I didn't mention this until I looked this up, but it might be worth checking out for our previous caller. The Bard mobile app. Look for it on iOS or Android. And it's, I'm sure, able to get those books. So you don't have to download them onto your computer. You can get them that way. 8888 Ask Leo. More of the Tech Guy Show. Alan in Moore Park, California. Hello, Alan.
How you doing?
I am well. How are you?
I got a problem. I got an Android 7 tablet, and I can't get the text-to-speech, the speech-to-text app to work, where you dictate your notes.
Hmm. Yeah. Is it okay? So it's under speech, tap text to speech options.
Well,
that's text to speech. You want speech to text, though, don't you? You want to dictate.
The thing of it is, I had the exact same device from Scamazon a month ago. And I sent it back because it got a bad battery, and I got this replacement. And on the first one, it worked.
Hmm. So are you dictating from the keyboard? Where are you dictating? How are you getting that to start?
Yeah, in theory, you're dictating from the keyboard into email or the Notes app. And then it says, can't access server, try again.
Oh, okay. Yeah, unfortunately, at the current state of the art with voice dictation is that it has to send it back. This is true of Siri as well as Android dictation in most cases. You have to send it back to the servers to do the processing, which will then send the text to your phone. And that actually adds a bit of a delay, which is annoying. And if you don't have a good internet connection, it won't work at all. And for a long time with Siri, the servers... You know, the Siri has many, 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 this is the Apple solution, has many, many different servers. And half the time you'd get a server that works well. Half the time you'd get a server that wasn't online or didn't work or something. And that became very frustrating. Apple's upgraded that. And I think both companies are trying to move closer to on-device dictation. But the problem is it takes a lot of storage and a lot of memory to do that. And typically these devices don't. So it's saying it can't get online. That's why it can't complete the dictation. You have internet access on that device, though, right?
Yeah, it's a phablet.
Okay, so you're able to open the browser and surf around and all that.
Yeah, I got T-Mobile 4G.
Yeah, I wonder what's going on there. I'm afraid from a remote distance, as I am, I can't tell you what's wrong. I mean, I understand that what it's saying is it can't get online. It can't get to that server. Does it do it all the time or just occasionally?
All the time.
All the time.
It never works, and I've tried about 10 different speech-to-text programs.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's one built in, which is on the keyboard, if you're using the Google keyboard.
No, there's nothing built in on Amazon, on Android 7. They eliminated it. You have to get a new app. You have to get an app to make it work on Android 7.
Oh, the Google Voice Assistant app or something like that?
Well, it's called Speech to Text, and I got it off Scamazon Apps.
Oh, well, that won't work with that'll only work with a Fire device. So you need to get it from the Android store on the device that you're using if it's not a Fire device. If it's a Fire device, then I don't know. Then that's Amazon. And I really don't know. Amazon isn't real Android. They've taken Android and they've modified it dramatically. So I have no idea what's going on with Amazon. I don't have a, I don't see, let me see. I was pretty sure that every, I mean, what version of Android I have here, because I was pretty sure that every Android device had dictation built into it. I'm kind of surprised that you can't just tap the microphone on the keyboard and dictate. Let me just see here. I'll try. This is a 7 device, I think. Maybe they did. Maybe I don't see it. Maybe they did take it out. So yeah, I'm afraid I don't have any advice for you. Maybe somebody listening does. 8888, ask Leo. Not sure what's going on there. To line 2 we go. April in Brooksville, Florida. Hi, April. Leo Laporte. Oh, hey, April.
Hey.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
What's up?
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
My husband wants to get a new router because our router is dropping us all the time.
Oh, I hate that. You know, routers wear out. I think people assume it's a solid state. Why would it wear out? But after a few years, it's probably a good idea to get a new router. How old is that router? Pretty old?
Yeah, it's a couple of years old.
Did it come from the internet service provider, or is it your device?
No, we bought it from Walmart.
Okay. Well, I tell you, how big is your house? How many thousand square feet do you want to cover?
Oh, only 1,300 square feet. We don't have a very big house.
So
my husband's biggest worry is that he doesn't want one made in China. My husband wears a tinfoil hat.
I don't know. That's going to be an interesting problem. How do you know? Let me see if I'm looking at. Yeah, this I have an Eero, which is what I use at home, assembled in China. that's an interesting question. Of course, the company I was about to recommend, TP-Link, is a Chinese company. So let's see. Tinfoil hat. Is Taiwan okay? It's not China. It's the Republic of China. It's not Chinese communist. It's a capitalist country. Is that okay?
It doesn't make a difference to me, but he's...
Well, ask him if Taiwan is okay. It's not China.
Okay.
ASUS is a Taiwanese company that makes all of its stuff in Taiwan, and they're very good. ASUS, they're actually the routers I recommend. And because they're Taiwanese companies and mainland China, they don't get along too well. Mainland China doesn't like Taiwan. Taiwan says, don't call us Chinese. So... even though they speak Chinese and they're near China, they are not China. And they are ASUS is an excellent company, and their routers are superb. So tell him, oh, no, honey, it's not made in China. It's made in Taiwan.
Well, he's just heard so many things about Internet.
Yeah, well, the U.S. Department of Commerce has actually recommended against Chinese networking equipment. So he's not wrong. He's not wrong, but ASUS is not as far, you know, I'll have to check, but because they're a Taiwanese company, I bet you their stuff is made in Taiwan, not China. And I really love their routers. That's a very interesting question, actually. So much of what we use today, if you get a Samsung phone, that's made in South Korea. Safer, right? iPhones are made in China, though. Assembled is a better word than made. Assembled. Parts come from all over, and I wouldn't be surprised if the ASUS router had some parts that were made in mainland China. But I'm pretty sure it's assembled. I'd have to look on the box. But check that out. Check that out. And are there any Korean manufacturers? Maybe. I don't think there are any routers made in the U.S. of A. I don't think so. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, ASUS does have some manufacturing in China. Mostly Taiwan. And Mexico. And I wonder if their router's made in Mexico. That's interesting. Everybody who uses passwords on the internet, you know you need LastPass. Man, I love LastPass. I started using LastPass practically when it was when it first came out. I remember, you know, I was singing its praises to Steve Gibson. He said, "Well, we better check this." He got Joe Segris, the creator of LastPass, to give him show him all the source code, how everything worked. And Steve Gibson, our security guy, gave it his seal of approval, and he started using LastPass. We use LastPass. I've been using it personally, but we use LastPass at the business. That happened when an engineer. One of our engineers couldn't remember all his passwords, so he created a public web page with all the logins to our web server, all of our stuff, and put it on the public web. That's when we said, we got to have a better way. So we subscribed to LastPass Enterprise. You know, 81% of all the breaches, you know, the bad loss of data, they're caused by weak or reused passwords. Reused is another big one. And I understand you use the same password over and over again because you can't remember 1,000 passwords. Every website, every app needs a password now. Who's going to remember? So you use the same one, you know, your kid's birth dates and your dog's name, and you add maybe a little, you know, your initials, right, to make it secure. But the problem is you use that over and over again. And if it, you know, Twitter has a breach, which they, you know, they said everybody has to change a Twitter password a month ago, then everywhere you used it, not just Twitter, has to be changed. You have to keep track of all that. How about this? Let's use a password vault that generates long, strong, unique passwords for every site. Passwords that you could never remember in a million years, but that's good because all you have to remember is the last password you ever have to remember, LastPass, the password to your vault. Make that good, strong, okay? Don't give that to anybody, but you can write it down, put it in your desk drawer. That's fine. That's the password to get into your vault. All you need is that, and now it's the first thing I install on my phones, on my desktop, anywhere. When I set up a new system, the first thing I do is install a browser and then install the LastPass plugin so that I never have to remember any passwords. It's great for your business, for easy onboarding, to password autofill, automated security reports. LastPass makes it easy for businesses to take control of passwords and reduce the threat of breach. Really is good. You can have levels of access. So we have a folder in our LastPass Enterprise just for the engineers that need access to the servers. They're the only ones who have access to it. LastPass Enterprise simplifies password management for companies of every size with the tools you need to secure your business while centralizing control of employee passwords and apps. We use it. We recommend it. And by the way, I love it because it's part of our benefits to working here. Everybody gets a copy of LastPass for themselves. Each employee has their own secure vault for managing passwords. You can also, as the administrator of your enterprise account, set master password requirements. We require two-factor, for instance, which is a great thing. You can restrict access to specific devices and locations. When I was in Japan, I had to go to my LastPass vault, log in, use the second factor, and say, yes, it's okay for me to use this in Japan. That's great. That means somebody logging in from overseas can't get into our LastPass because we say, no, you're in China. You can't access it. You can enable password resets. I see that every once in a while. I'll get an email. Russell, who administers it for us, we'll all get emails, all the administrators saying, hey, Joe forgot his password. I like knowing that. LastPass makes password sharing better, too. Lisa and I are always sharing family passwords. We use LastPass to do that. Employees can do the same thing and yet keep your corporate data secure, of course. LastPass is securely encrypted AES 256 to prevent man-in-the-middle attacks. Nobody, including LastPass, has access to your vault, just you and the people you give access to it. If you want to take control of passwords, you got to do it. And whether it's at business level with the LastPass Enterprise or LastPass Premium for personal use, LastPass Families for the entire family, small team, LastPass for teams, 50 people or less, at work, at home, fix your password woes. If there's one thing I want you to do today to secure yourself, it's start using LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Learn more at LastPass.com/twit today. LastPass.com/twit. Check it out and see which product is right for you. And if you're a business and you're not using LastPass Enterprise, hurry, because it's only a matter of time before one of your engineers puts all the passwords up on a website because he can't remember them. LastPass.com/twit. And we thank them for their support of The Tech Guy Show. It's disco time with Disco Dick DiBartolo. He's met. Is that Donna Summer?
Hot it stuff? Is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hot stuff for the summertime. Dick DiBartolo is Mads Mattis writer. He has been for decades, but he's also a crazy gadget hound, a giz wizard, gizmo wizard, or giz whiz in the parlance. And he joins us every week. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing?
Do you know any routers not made in China?
What is mine?
I think everything's made in China.
No, mine is the Wonton 312.
With six, you get egg roll. So that's
yeah, exactly.
Nice.
Yeah, exactly.
So Dick joins us every week with a crazy gadget or gizmo.
Yeah.
What do you got this
week? You know, I'm a little disappointed because someone in the chat room says Leah knows about this. So it was CE Week in New York City, okay, over at the Javits Center. So I found two gadgets, an expensive one and a cheap one. The one that I thought you were going to be thrilled about, the chat room says, you know about the digital license plate.
Know about it. I have one.
Oh, my gosh. You know what? I said to Dennis, you know what? I have to talk about this because right now it's only available in California.
Right.
Leah will be okay.
We had him on the new Screensavers show. It's kind of a kooky idea. And actually, they offered me one and I decided not to because you have a monthly subscription. And I decided I didn't want to pay a monthly fee for my digital license plate. But Josh, who does the radio show website, has one on his car. And it's kind of cool because it's like e-ink technology. So it's very readable and legible. They worked with the California Highway Patrol. It's going to be approved in other states soon. And you can have different messages on it, but only when you're parked.
Yes. And also, it's $700, right? $699?
Yeah. Well, they were going to give it to me, but I thought, I can't really see any advantage over the plain old metal license plate, at least for now.
Yeah.
They intended for fleets mostly. It has location, a location device, and you can put the company's name on it.
I also like it if your car is stolen, you can change the license plate to stolen.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. In fact, that might be worth it.
You can do Amber Alert. You know, you can do lots of things on it. But you're right. A lot of people that I told about it said, wait, I might pay $700 for the license plate. I'm not paying a monthly fee
That was what got me. Yeah. It's a cool technology. Yeah, we had them on. It looks really, really neat. And it would look nice on my Tesla since I already spent way too much money on that.
Well, it doesn't look good on my boat. They'll say, why do you have a license plate?
You don't drive, do you?
No, I don't. I said to the guy, I said, it's $700. I said, I'm in for another $40,000. I have to buy a car to put it on. Okay.
Right.
Well, then I will tell you about my Flip Shade. Do you know about that?
I never heard of it.
Good. Okay. Because it was introduced at CE Week and it goes on sale, I think, this very week. So my Flip Shade is from MyCharge. You know, the people who make all those external battery charges, phones.
Yeah.
So my Flip Shade is a little plastic shade that attaches to almost every iPhone. So it flips up and then it has fold out wings. This is great for the summer when you're trying to read your phone in the sun.
You know what would be also good? I know Uber and Lyft drivers, you know, they have their phone because that's the app.
Yes.
And I had an Uber driver who had a piece of cloth over his phone. I said, what are you doing? He said, it gets too hot in the sun. So this would be great for that because they could use that to protect it from the sun.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can fold it over the back and use it as a stand. It comes in black, it comes in marble, and for some reason it comes in pineapple. Okay. not the color pineapple. It's a white cover with pictures of pineapples on it.
Oh.
But the neat thing, Leo, it's under $10.
Oh.
So it's very clever. And the little side, you see them?
It's a pineapple version.
Yeah, exactly. And the little side shades are clickable. So you can raise and lower the shade so you get the amount
of. It's for the beach.
It's for the beach. There you go. The pineapple one is for the beach.
Yeah, you go to the beach, and you gotta. And it's only $10. That's cool.
It's $10.
Yeah,
yeah.
This is a perfect GizWiz product.
Gadget. Exactly. Gadget. Yeah. Exactly. Now, it's just for iPhones. I said to the woman, nothing for Android. She said, you could use it on your Android phone, but you might not be happy because it'll most likely cover your camera.
Well, that's no good.
I said, no, that's okay. I said, I'll just start doing the GizWiz as an audio podcast.
If you go to gizwiz.biz, that's Dick's website, GizWiz.biz, and then click on the GizWiz Visits the Tech Guy, and you get links to the Neville R-Plate Pro electronic license plate, soon available in your state, or the $10 My Flip Shade, your choice.
You should also, and no monthly fee.
No monthly fee for the Flip Shade. You should also play the What the Heck Is It contest, because that's also free, and a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. We only got a little bit more time, another week.
Yeah, exactly. This week and next Saturday.
And you'll be playing for the Hollywood edition of Mad Magazine. What? Me worry? Says Alfred E. Newman as he falls into the cement on Hollywood Boulevard. That's awesome. And you get that autographed to you if you win, but you got to check it out. Read the rules at gizwiz.biz. He has a great podcast. You have a great podcast, my friend. It's called
The GizWiz,
and you can find it at gizwiz.tv. Dickie D, thank you.
Okay, buddy. I'll talk to you next week.
Enjoy. How hot is it in New York?
Today, it's only 71.
Oh, it's but, perfect.
Yesterday, it was kind of
I'm
muggy.
Going to New York. It's 100 degrees here. It's crazy.
I thought you said you were coming to New York.
I wish I were.
You are Josh.
We're coming in December when it'll be nice and balmy.
Oh, yeah.
I'm coming out. I got tickets to see Bruce Springsteen. And I decided, as long as we're out there, I'm going to go see that Harry Potter and the...
Oh, yeah.
And the Cursed Child or whatever it's called. It's so long, they split it in two. They say either watch it two nights in a row or get the matinee in the evening. So we got the matinee. We're going to go to the matinee, have dinner, then watch part two that evening.
Perfect.
Is that nuts?
Perfect. No, that's what people are doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll meet for dinner.
It was
we'll have a late lunch.
Remember there was the Mystery of Edwin Drood did the same thing. It was such a long play.
Yeah, Angels in America.
Angels
also.
In America was split up.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy, I'll talk to you next week.
Have a great time. I got a minute left. Let's see if I can help Anna in Laguna Hills. It's going to be instant help. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Leo. I was on Facebook this past weekend, and which I do about maybe every 2-3 months, you know, to check on the family. I clicked on the link, got the red screen on my computer with this blaring sound, finally disconnected and shut down my computer, and I had the hardest time booting back up. But now what I notice is I can't access Google from my computer. I can go through the Internet Explorer, but Google Chrome does not.
All right. Hang on the line because I want to help you with this. I don't know if you got malware. I'm going to have to ask you some more questions, or maybe you just need to reinstall Chrome. I'm hoping it's the latter. But we have to wrap it up. I want to thank Michael. So hang on. I'll help you off the air. Michael Cozio, our musical director, Kim Schaffer, for answering the phones. Most of all, thank you for joining me. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. See you next time. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Sorry, Anna. Wow, that's not good. So let's see here. You clicked a link in Facebook, and what did the blaring red sign say?
It was a red screen with the phone number that my computer was compromised.
Yeah.
Security was...
That's bogus. So you don't have to worry about that.
Okay.
That's trying to get you to call them so that they can infect your computer and take your money.
although, you know, on the taskbar on the right side of my computer, there is this flag and it has a message. It says solve PC issues.
Okay. So that is real. That's from Microsoft. That's the Microsoft Security Center. So the thing you saw... is something that kind of scammers try to get on your system so that you'll call them. I'm glad you didn't. You didn't call the number, right?
No, I didn't.
I'm glad you had the sense not to call the number, because that's just them trying to get some money out of you. And sometimes they actually, you know, they'll ask for remote access. They'll say for a few hundred dollars, we can fix this problem. They'll make up a bunch of problems. They'll have you go through some steps that make it look like you've got problems, even though you don't. Mm-hmm. And then they'll ask you for money. And sometimes during the remote access part of the call, they can actually put stuff on your computer. So never call those numbers.
Oh, yeah.
And those pop-ups are easy to do on websites. It's a little unusual. I've never heard it happening if you're actually on Facebook, but you might have had another website in the background, or maybe you clicked a link in Facebook that took you outside to an outside.
Yes, it did. It had something to do with America Has Talent or whatever.
Yeah.
It looked interesting.
It was a scam.
I said, okay, I'll click on that.
Yeah. So, but no harm done.
Yeah.
As long as you're using, are you using Windows 10?
No, I'm at 7.
7's fine.
Yeah.
And you're, but you keep it up to date, right? You've got all the updates.
The automatic updates.
Beautiful. Yeah. And your browser, you said, was IE11. That's good. So you keep it all up to date. That, as long as you're up to date, the chances are they weren't able to get anything in your system. They have to get you to agree to install something.
Oh, okay.
So you're probably all right. Now, I would check that, click that flag and see what the troubleshooter, that actually is Microsoft. That's safe to click in the system tray. That's going to launch the security center, and they may say, sometimes they say stupid things like, well, you don't have an antivirus, or you haven't backed up in a while, stuff like that. But see if they offer any sensible information. They may have some simple fix. Chrome, when you launch Chrome, you said you can run IE, but you can't launch Chrome. What happens when you run it?
Okay, when I click on Chrome, it just gives me a blank white screen.
Okay.
And then every once in a while, a new tab pops up. But then within 30 seconds, it, like right now, I tried it, and it says restore pages, Chrome didn't shut down correctly.
That's fine.
And then within 30 seconds, it drops, and it's gone.
That's normal. That's Chrome. But you say even if you try to load another page, it won't open.
And then the cursor just stops. I mean, it freezes. And the page drops, it's gone, and, you know, Chrome is gone.
So it sounds like Chrome is crashing. It's possible that at some point you have installed something that is a Chrome extension or a browser hijacker that is causing issues with Chrome.
Mm-hmm.
So one way to see if this is the case is to launch Chrome in what we call safe mode. Which will not launch any of these extra doohickeys, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, let's see, how can we do this easily? I don't want to do a complicated thing, because one way to do it is to change the. Can you hold down a key?
I'm really a novice.
Yeah, that's fine. And I'm glad you called. And I think you're probably okay. If you can launch it in safe mode, you know, I'm looking for the easy way to do this. There's a harder way to do it that is kind of annoying, where you have to change the shortcut. But there should you say cuz Chrome closes entirely, you can't get to the menu icon at all.
Right.
So, yeah, we want to do it with the launch. Used to be you could hold the shift key, but I don't think that works anymore. Let me see. Is it shift launch? Does that work still, bleep blurp? I'm looking at our chat room. See if they can do this. Because you can do it from the menu, but you can't even get the menu. So I want to...
Right.
I want to... yeah, I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it from the menu. I want to do it when you're launching to me. Control Shift Chrome, they're saying. Let me try this myself to see if that works. Control Shift and then launch Chrome. Yes. I don't know What does that do? Control shift.
Okay. Do you want to allow the following program to make the change?
Yeah, that's normal. Yeah. And see if that does that. And then see if it will launch.
Okay. Okay, I get the tab with it says restore because it didn't shut down.
Yeah, don't click restore. Just cancel that out.
Okay.
Because you don't want to restore that bad page.
Right. See, now it freezes.
It's just frozen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chrome not responding.
Chrome is not responding. Yeah. So probably it would be sufficient for you to uninstall Chrome and reinstall it.
Okay.
What happened is when you clicked the link, it launched Chrome. It launched a tab in Chrome, and that was that malware thing. And it screwed something up in Chrome. And what I want to be, if we could launch Chrome in safe mode, it's such a pain in the butt to do it. But
how do I do that?
I'm looking. Troubleshoot Chrome. Fix next. Fix problem apps. Fix problems. Chrome. Fix problem apps. Windows. Yeah. See, all of the reset commands require Chrome to be open, and since you can't even get to it to be open,
right.
That's
right.
A little bit trickier.
Yeah.
And that's why I want to start it in safe mode. You used to be able to do that. Well, I guess what you need to do is to go if you hit the Windows key and type uninstall. You'll see add remove programs, and you can actually remove Chrome.
Okay. I think that's in my control panel.
Yeah, exactly. It's a control panel.
Okay.
And then, all of the solutions, unfortunately, require you to have Chrome running, which is silly because what you need is a solution that will prevent Chrome from starting up with this.
Mm-hmm.
And then, unfortunately, Chrome saves its user data. Boy, this should not be so hard. This is really ridiculous. On an Internet Explorer, you just hold down the Shift key. It looks like Chrome has made this more difficult than it used to be. Mm-hmm. Chrome user data. Oh, boy. Oh, boy, there's a folder that does store, that has the information that will not be removed when you uninstall, unfortunately. And it's complicated, unfortunately, to find it and delete it. There's a lot of commands, and I'm not sure. I understand, you know, this is tricky for you.
I would hate to lose whatever.
Well, you won't lose anything but you have to browse to your username, app data, local, Google, Chrome, user data. It's way down in your operating system. There's a folder that has all of this stuff. Somewhere in that folder, there's something that is keeping Chrome from launching. There's a messed up page.
Mm-hmm.
And what we'd like to do is delete it. One more option here from Bleeping Computer, which is, by the way, a great site for you to know about. Bleepingcomputer.com. It's a help site. They offer a Chrome cleanup tool this is a reliable site, and the cleanup tool is written by Google that will scan your computer for problems in Chrome. So this actually is probably exactly what you want.
Okay.
Now, to get to it is a little long, complicated thing. You probably could Google Bleeping Computer, one word.
Yeah.
And Chrome Cleanup Tool.
Okay.
And I think that would be enough to find it. You obviously have to use an Explorer to do this.
Right.
But if you can find that tool and download it, get it from Bleeping Computer,
mm-hmm.
and you run it, and that should get rid of whatever this is that's causing Chrome's a problem. And you may at that point want to uninstall and reinstall Chrome.
All right. Okay.
It's my belief that your system is not infected, but so this should be enough to do it. But it's probably not a bad idea to run a system scan just in case.
Okay.
And that's under that flag.
Right.
So you might write that.
Okay. All right. Well, Leo, thank you.
I am sorry. This is way too complicated. This really shouldn't be so complicated. And so when you buy your next computer, get a Chromebook instead of a Windows machine.
I'm sorry. Get a what?
It's something called a Chromebook. It's not Windows. It's Chrome OS. It's much more secure, much safer, mm-hmm. much more reliable. And if what you do is you just use the web. You get email. You keep an eye on the family at Facebook, stuff like that. It's much safer, much less likely to have security issues. Mm.
I heard you talk about Lenovo earlier.
Lenovo's good, but Windows, the problem is that people buy Macs and Windows. They buy these general purpose, elaborate operating systems, which, you know, some people need if you're launching rockets or designing bridges or mm-hmm. editing video. But mm-hmm. for most people, they're just surfing the web, getting email, shopping, stuff like that. Yeah. A simpler system that's more secure would be better, and that's mm-hmm. that's the Chromebook, it's called.
Okay.
They're not expensive.
Does that have the Word application? Because I do use that quite a bit.
Well, it has Google's own word processing is built into it and stores it in the Google Cloud. And you can use Microsoft Word on the web, but it does not offer the Microsoft Office download.
Oh, okay.
But do you need all those features? You may. I mean, people use Word, but they may not need everything. Are you writing?
Not everything, yeah. Every once in a while I use Excel, but...
Yeah, there's a spreadsheet. Google has a free word processor spreadsheet programs on Google Drive that are really... It's called Google Docs. They're quite good. Mm-hmm. They come with the Chromebook. I bet you it has all the features you'd ever need.
Okay.
You never have to worry about backup. You never have to worry about viruses. You know, you click a link like this, and there's a setting called Power Wash. You run it, and everything's back to normal. It's really the problem is that you know, we all bought Windows because that's what you bought.
Yes.
But you kind of had to become you have to kind of become a security expert. And who wants to do that?
I know. I don't have the time for that.
No.
I'm retired.
Nobody got time for that, Anna. So next computer, get a Chromebook.
Yes. I think I will.
All right.
Leo, I appreciate so much your help, and I totally enjoy your show every week.
You're wonderful. Thank you, Anna. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Leo.
All right. Have a good day. I'm sorry this happened to you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I feel for people who, if you don't have a family member like me, you know, somebody who can come in and fix all this stuff, you're just out of luck. You know, what do you do? I can't tell her, well, go to %appdata%/, I can't tell her to do that. You know, open the command line and it should have been an easier way to launch Chrome in safe mode. The fact that you can't do that is really annoying. They used to have a shortcut for it. Yeah, but I don't, you know, none of these are easy if Chrome's not working. You know, then you have to launch it with the command line --- incognito mode. So I'm not going to tell Anna, okay, right-click on the icon and go to properties and look at the command line and add --- incognito- mode to the command line. I mean, I'm not going to tell her to do that. It's just not right.